traveling the vortex. Whoa, I'm an alien. I'm a legal alien. I'm an Englishman in New York. Whoa, I'm an alien. I'm a legal alien. I'm an Englishman in New York.
We've joined the Doctor as he travels the vortex. It landed at episode number 92. I'm Keith.
I'm Sean.
Lynn's over here laughing and making me laugh, ruining it.
I'm sorry. I'm Glenn.
Way to be a team player, Glenn.
He was the one that even knew I was going to do it.
I did. I told him he should do it.
How are you guys after down the weekends?
Sad episode, but is this what I'm supposed to be reading? Now you find it?
Oh, I found it. How was your weekend?
Pretty good. An actually slow weekend for Sarah and I. We got a lot done on the apartment.
It looks good.
Yeah, thank you. Got a lot of stuff hung, got rid of some boxes, finally, and went and saw Looper.
How was it?
Phenomenal.
As a resident time travel expert?
It is really good. I did not have any issues with how the time travel is used in it. Also, it helps that it sets up its own rules. And there are things in it where you start thinking, wait, that doesn't quite work. And then they resolve those issues right away.
Oh, I love films that do that.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt does a fantastic job not only being a young Bruce Willis, but bringing something else to the character as well. And it's set in Kansas.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
Well, you ought to be totally excited about
that. Yeah, I love that. I saw an interview with Emily Blunt that she studied Chris Cooper to try to get his accent, since he's from Kansas.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, he's from Kansas City.
Cool.
So I highly recommend it, especially if you liked Brick, Rian Johnson's first film. I haven't seen Brothers Bloom, so I can't comment on that.
I haven't seen neither.
I have Brick if you want to borrow it. I think it's on Netflix, too. But both really good. I came to see this several days after Rian Johnson came out and said, I'd love to direct an episode of Doctor Who sometime. Glenn, how was your weekend?
Good. I don't know what I did. Relaxing weekend. Didn't do much. We did another Disney movie night.
Which one?
We did Dumbo this week. We took the kids to the mall.
Please tell me you didn't have circus peanuts for dinner.
No. Well, we had peanuts, but not circus peanuts. Okay. Not those orange fluffy
things. Those orange fluffy.
Not the doorstops.
For any of our listeners, if you happen to enjoy circus peanuts, there's something wrong. Please stop listening, because I don't want to be associated with you.
No, we took the kids to the mall, first of all.
I can taste them.
And they have that bungee cord thing that you can bounce on the things. And
talking about circus peanuts.
Really super high. Yeah, well, you bounce that bungee on those, too.
Like, if you're not on a bungee cord, it kind of tastes like that.
That's what it does taste like.
Same consistency, too.
We took them to do that kind of as a high-flying type, fun
That's
thing to do.
Very cool.
They had a blast.
Did you get on it?
No. And they had a cotton candy. They had a cotton candy machine, so we got cotton candy out of the cotton candy machine. And then when we came home, I had put together a spread of peanuts, regular peanuts in the shell. We got chicken nuggets, because that's what the kids eat, and popcorn, and Barnum animal crackers. And so that's what the kids had for dinner. And then we sat down and watched Dumbo.
What'd they think of Dumbo?
They both liked it. I was a little leery about Mason because he didn't really seem like he was into it at all this week when we were talking about the lead up, because we told him early on that it was going to be Dumbo. And he sat down and watched it. Of course, I think it's the shortest Disney animated film. It's like it clocks in at 63 minutes. So it's one and done. And so he enjoyed it. They're both kids. Caitlin has seen a lot of times, because when she was his age, she used to watch these movies over and over and over and over again and wear them out. He just never did that. He cottoned on to other things. And so That's why we're going through these and make sure that he's pretty much well versed. But Caitlin's having a blast too.
Well, that's good.
I never liked Dumbo.
I was never a big fan of it.
You never liked Dumbo?
It's not that I didn't like Dumbo. I just never. It was all right. I never did it. And it wasn't Peter
Dumbo's
Pan.
Dumbo's so cute. Yeah, Peter Pan's awesome. But Dumbo's just so cute and it's such a nice uplifting success story, you know?
Oh, yeah. Mom's in jail, rocking him to sleep through the bars.
But only because she was protecting him because he was being...
That's so uplifting.
Because he's being made fun of. I mean, it was a mother sticking up for her son. It's a son who finds his place in the world.
It's an underdog story. Yeah.
It's really cool.
It is.
Timothy Mouse, who is a little bit of a con man, but you couldn't have a better friend. I mean...
I'm going to start reviewing these Disney movies. That's what we need to do.
He really is a con man. First of all, he goes and plants the idea for the big, you know, elephant act that's going to happen in the ringmaster's ear. And then later he convinced Dumbo that if he has a magic feather, he can fly. I mean, talk about a con artist.
What's the moral of the story, kids? You should always listen to your friends. When they say, hey, go jump off of that building because you'll be all right,
you have a magic feather.
Well, you have to admit, they ended up in a tree. He had pretty good
luck,
evidence that it could be done. He just had to convince Dumbo that it could be done. And that's where the con artist comes in.
All right.
Sean, what'd you do? You had an adventurous weekend.
As I mentioned, Brother Aaron's house unfortunately burned down.
You always say Brother Aaron as though he's like in the clergy or something.
Well, there is... Anybody who's ever met Aaron would most assuredly go, no, he's not in the clergy.
Whenever I hear brother, I just don't automatically think clergy.
Really?
No. Father, yes. Brother, no.
Boy, if I called him Father Aaron, that would be weird.
That would be really weird.
Brother Aaron.
That's what monks always call each other.
Well, that's... monks, but not
brother
clergy.
So-and-so, brother-so.
But I am not a monk.
Or deacons in a church, they always call each other brother-so-and-so.
That's not what comes to mind.
I get where you're going with it. I'm not a deacon or a monk, so when I say, as anybody who knows me would go,
I know that, yeah.
No. He's Mel's brother, so he's Brother Aaron. Because I know other Aarons, so it's kind of like Odd Doug Phil, you know, got to differentiate between them. But Brother Aaron did wind up moving, and so we hopped in the car after work Friday at 6 o'clock, and drove from Topeka, Kansas, all the way down to Chucky, Tennessee.
Chucky. As in cheese?
Sure. It's Tennessee, man. I stopped asking questions. Once we hit the border, it was like, all bets are off, man.
Had you ever been to Tennessee before?
I'd never been to Tennessee before.
First time in Tennessee?
First time in Tennessee. I've been to Kentucky. That was as far as, other than Florida, that was as far as south as I've been. So, by reputation only.
Did you guys go to Nashville?
We drove through Nashville twice.
Cool. Very cool.
That's kind of like me having a plane stop in Nashville, you know, but not getting off the plane.
You had a plane stop in Nashville?
On the way to Maryland, yeah. So went down to Nashville. And that's where they lost my luggage and took it off. And yeah. Even though I didn't get off the plane, my luggage did.
Why do travel agents not own maps? Okay, where are you going? Well, I'm in Kansas City, and I'm going to fly to Maryland. Okay, let's send me to Nashville. That's south. Maryland is north.
You understand how that works. Often
yeah,
you
they
got
to go to
better.
A hub or whatever. I don't care.
No. Often you can get better and cheaper flights that way if you decide...
By flying out of the way and spending more gas?
Because
no, it doesn't make a lick of sense.
It does
it fills
make a lick
up the plane
of sense
more.
Because what it does is, it fills the plane.
Don't care.
And so they can get you on a flight. Now, I'll be the first to say I am a huge advocate of direct flights.
Oh,
fact,
yeah, absolutely.
Our flight to Orlando in December is straight there.
Especially
because
with kids.
We've got kids.
I have no
However,
issue with connecting flights. I have zero issue
if
with
I'm
connecting flights.
Save $100. I'll fly clear to L.A. to go to New York.
Here's the deal.
Another 3 hours on a plane.
When I first started putting together the galley trip last year, it was okay. We're flying out of KCI, which is Kansas City, and then the first thing they said was, "Well, we can get you on a flight to Chicago, to then turn around and go to L.A." So I've got to go to Chicago so I can turn around and fly back over the city I just left.
You wouldn't.
No, that doesn't make any sense.
Not exactly, yeah.
Okay, well, how about Charlotte?
That
Charlotte, North
sense.
Carolina? Less sense. I mean, I'm going west. The sun sets in the west. I want to go that direction.
But I bet you paid more for a ticket to go straight west.
Well, then she finally said, well, I've got one that goes to Denver.
She? Who's
yes,
she?
The agent that I was dealing
with
at the time.
Oh, you went through a ticket agent? Well, that
well
was,
just
whoever. See, I just want to press
anyway. I go online.
Well,
anymore.
Yeah, just
but
whoever,
it's the same thing.
I can cut, no,
well,
I
remember
can,
at this point, though, we were
corners now,
remember so. At this point, we were getting desperate. So
well,
I was calling anybody and everybody I could. But then she finally says, oh, there's one that goes through Denver. I was like, okay, Denver's good. Denver's west of here. Where does it go from there? Seattle.
No!
Was that the final destination?
Wait, you're going to go Denver, then Seattle,
then
LA?
LA.
Well, see, I don't know about switching planes three times. That's
yeah,
kind of
this is where they...
On the other
they
hand,
think
if you
this
do
is the greatest
wait until a week
sliced
before
bread.
You're getting ready to go to
this
California,
is what
you kind of take what you can
well,
get.
Yeah, anyway, I got there. But yeah, so it was just one of those things. So anyway, I've been through... Nashville, but we got down there and
got a lot of
just a little got his few remaining belongings packed up, and that was really harsh because he said, okay, this is the thing. He says, I got my safe, my filing cabinet, my Rock Band instruments if they survived, and my movies. That's what I want. Get that stuff out. I'm gonna go empty out what he had. He had some other stuff in a storage shed. So we went to get his car and the storage shed and get it packed up. So we're standing there in the husk of this house. I mean, it went and there was nothing. I mean, the microwave was bubbled and melted and the fridge had melted. And I mean, this was an intense fire. His bedroom was in the room next door to the one where the fire started. So I'm thinking, oh, this isn't going to be good. His movies, which he had about 400 DVDs, were on the wall next to the bedroom where the fire started. And it was really, really heartbreaking because you guys, I mean, you've seen my movie collection on our YouTube channel. And so just to to sit there and open them up and have ash fall out and smoke and damage to the plastic and the covers. And it was like, okay, well, we can rescue the discs, most of them.
Some of
them. We're going to have to throw everything else out. And so, I mean, it was just a two-hour process of popping all those things open, pulling the disc out, tossing the rest of it, pop a disc, take and just and with every... as these things hit the trash bag, it just killed me to do it. Because this is my thing, man. It's movies. Can't do it. But so we got him packed up and then jumped back in the car and turned around.
Was it just him? He's not married or anything.
He has a baby's mama.
Okay.
And two boys, but they're not coming up as of yet. The plan as of right now is just to get his stuff
but
out.
But they weren't at the house.
They were at the house, but they got out in time.
Oh, good.
So, no, I got to meet the whole family. Mel's nephews. But so we jumped back in the car and we started driving. And it was about that time that I started postulating the idea. Because keep in mind, I mean, we worked on the show Friday. And
later than normal.
Later than normal.
Oh.
And so I got home and had to run to the bank to make sure that I had money for this weekend. And he paid for all the gas and everything on the way down, which, you know, I appreciate that because, you know, we're doing him a favor.
Was he here?
Yeah,
oh.
He's actually still here. He won't leave again.
No, but he was here, so you guys all rode down together.
Yeah, he wound up getting things rearranged with his trucking company where he could drop his truck here and some other guy was going to come and drop off a load for him to pick up later after he got done with this. So it was Mel and myself and Brother Aaron and her other brother Pete. And the four of us crammed into this car and drove down. And then they drove his car back because we thought, well, with four people we can share the driving and it won't be as bad. And we can Iron Man our way through this. And so late Saturday, I began formulating the plan, which was, I'll pay for the hotel. We check in. We find a cheap hotel. We check in. We bunk out for 4 or 5 hours. We get back up and continue because I'm not going to make it. He's been awake longer than I have. And I'm starting to go and, you know, be a little insane. So... got on the thing and did the reservations and got a cheap Super 8 motel in Nashville, which we then drove to, and they didn't have a reservation. And they had no rooms. No vacancy in the inn, period. And the guy looked at me and laughed. He pointed to the little sign he had taped to the window, and I'm pointing to my phone going, I have a reservation. And he's like, not here, you don't. I'm like, yes, I do. This is the address. No, I didn't have a reservation. Something happened at the reservation center, and it glitched out and didn't take.
Aww.
So then we jumped back in the car and drove another hour at midnight to budget in somewhere, which they were very, very nice people and they were a godsend. And I have to admit, we were initially going to pull a sneaky. We were only going to say, oh, yeah, there's only two of us in a room with two beds. Because, you know, that made sense. And then the other two would sneak in, so we didn't have to pay as much. But there was this sweet little Indian lady, or Hindu, I'm not sure what she was. And, you know, she's like, you drive car? You drive all night? You come here? Like, yeah, okay. So, how many? There's four of us. And she looked at me like, oh, you lied to me on that, you know. I was like, no, we didn't know who was going to make it because the reservations fell through at the other place. And, you know, okay, well, I put you in a room and it was like $12 more. And she put us instead of two doubles in two queens. I was like, I don't care. That's worth it. Yeah. It wound up being $1 more than what I would have paid for the Super 8 in Nashville. There you go. So I was like, lady, you're a godsend. I don't care at this point. I'm not gonna stiff you, you know. So I came out, and everybody's like, did you tell her there's only two of us? I was like, no, I didn't. So we slept and then got up and finished the drive the next day and stopped in Sedalia and had WoW.
I saw that.
Which is not on the buffet anymore.
What?
I went up to the buffet, and it was not there. And I'm like, okay, all of motion in the restaurant has to stop. Get me somebody important, because the thing that I drove here for is not here.
And, you had to order it?
Yeah, I had to order it. It's an appetizer.
Explain what this is.
So wait a minute. Did you remember what it was called?
Well, we've never...
Because we've called it WoW.
We've called it WoW. We never really found out the name. I think it was written on the tag as cream cheese chicken or something.
That's what it is.
Yeah. No, it isn't.
What is it?
Well, they've changed the name of it, too. It's chicken with cream cheese.
Well, yeah. It was chicken with cream cheese.
But the waiter that I stopped and I said, where's the cream cheese chicken, looked at me like I was speaking Hindu instead of Chinese, because he didn't understand me.
Well.
No, we don't have that. I was like, yes, you do. And then I had to stop and think. It's been 2 years since I was at that specific one, so maybe they don't anymore.
Yeah, because you've since eaten at the one in Warrensburg.
Yeah. Long story short, we found a fantastic Chinese buffet restaurant in Sedalia, Missouri, many years ago. And any excuse that we get to stop there, we stop there. And
For this one item, because all the rest of it's just your average fare. Yeah. I mean, it's still good. It's good Chinese food. But there's this one item on the menu that we'd never had anywhere. They used to have it on the on the buffet. So
and didn't anymore. Hmm. So I had to ask for it, and then they kind of looked at me like, "You want that with your buffet?" I'm like, "Yeah." Well, it'll take a while to cook. Okay.
And then I'll be here a while.
I also need my coconut shrimp. Because that's the other thing that's phenomenal there. So I ordered coconut
shrimp.
That wasn't on the buffet. And that's kind of been hit or miss. Like some days it's on, some days it isn't. Yeah. Today it wasn't. So I was like, I need an order of coconut shrimp. And they said, but you ordered the buffet. I was like, yes. And an appetizer. Yes. And this? Yes. I keep in mind, I've got my fat guy Hawaiian print shirt on. So it's like, bring on the food. Like, I'm hungry. For here? Yes. Okay. So then they brought me.
I still can't believe you didn't bring me back any WoW.
They brought me a to-go bag. they still put it in. So I promptly opened it up and dished it out onto the plate,
can't
and then put it back
in
the thing.
WoW.
I probably
would have if it had been on the buffet. Because you could have taken as much as you
wanted. Well, I actually did bring back some WoW, and I left it at home. Mm. I have two pieces left that came in this cute little styrofoam container. So I brought it
because
back.
Because you remember, we weren't sure it would travel. And we brought it back, and it's not as good.
It's not as good.
It's never as good.
And if anybody knows how to make this, I have every single time since when was our first tournament?
Chicken with cream cheese is a very deceiving thing because it's not exactly that.
No, it's got seafood in it too, but we can't quite figure it out.
They must add crab. It's kind of like a crab rangoon with chicken in it, but they don't fold it the same way. It's rolled.
Here's the deal. It is
a wonton.
It is a chicken breast that's sliced very thin.
Yes.
And then breaded. And then rolled up.
But breaded's a misnomer too, because it's that wonton breading, like it's not real crumbly though. It's flaky, but it's not crumbly. It's not like crumbly breading.
Well, it's not crunchy. It's not like fried chicken breaded, but it's it's like a shake and bake breaded. I thought.
Oven baked?
I didn't think it was that flaky, but...
Okay. And anyway, so it's this chicken breast. But then they stuff it full of this cream cheese and seafood, kind of like a crab rangoon interior.
It's probably the crab rangoon stuffing.
It's the same stuffing.
Yeah.
And then it's rolled and sliced. So it's literally chicken on the outside. Yeah, like a jelly roll. It's like a chicken on the outside with crab and cream cheese in the middle. Mm, and we first found this in 2000. So I had to go back and think about it. It was 2002 when the card game came 10 out.
10 years ago. Yeah.
So it was 10 years ago that we found this. And it was on the buffet, and somebody was, and they ate it, and they were like, wow. And we were like, what? And they said, you got to try this. And then we tried it.
And we said,
like,
what is it? And he says, it's just wow.
Wow. And that was all we could say. It was just wow.
From then on, it's called wow.
And every time I have gone there for 10 years, I have asked, can I get the recipe? And every time they look at me in that same broken English and say, no. Because then you know come back. And they strung me along for all this time.
It's so good. Oh my gosh, it's so good.
But that was my weekend. We covered.
I actually almost made a detour to Sedalia on our way to Branson
just to have wow. Dude, that's totally worth it. You should have.
Man, my family would not have agreed.
We stopped on the way Holly back from Branson like and had that, to, and so. The kids ate it. So absolutely, that's acceptable.
Although I could have done Warrensburg. That's closer. So
that's on the way.
Not exactly.
What did I figure we
did? It's a little off the path.
1,873 miles in just under 55 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. And then there was wow. So that was my weekend.
Cool. All right. Well, let's move on.
News. Our first bit of news is that
the pawns are gone.
BBC Books is going to release a special book inspired by Angels Take Manhattan. It's called Angel's Kiss. It's a 112-page novella written by Justin Richards, and it's the book read in the episode.
Was that the actual title of it? Was Angel's Kiss?
They never said the name.
It was just the
it was just a Melody Malone mystery.
Mystery.
They show us the cover of it sometimes. I wonder if you looked really close if that's what it says.
It looks like the exact same book as what, because they include a cover in this article. It looks like the exact same book minus the Doctor Who logo on the top of it.
Huh. So there's a Doctor Who logo on it.
Yeah.
On the book that they're releasing.
Can I just say nothing excites me more than crossover tie-in books that actually exist in the universe that they're portrayed in? Like, it's like the Castle novels. I get so excited when I go to the store and buy the new Richard Castle book, and it's got Nathan Fillion's picture on the back of the cover. it is the coolest thing ever.
Regardless of how good they are.
First one was really good.
I agree. I could not get to the second one.
I haven't read the second one yet. Mel liked it.
But this book will be available electronically October 4th.
Oh, it's just a few days from now.
Yeah, 2 days from now, technically.
Yeah, because we are now recording this after midnight. Which, by the way, sorry we're delayed, but as you heard Sean's story, that's the reason why.
There was wow.
So
any delay was acceptable for wow.
And apparently this is going to be the first book in a range to be published written from the perspective of one of the show's characters. So there might be more to come from the perspective of the show's characters. So it'd be like the episode, just from a different angle.
So which one of you guys are going to review that book?
I'll read it.
I'm going to read it regardless.
I'll probably read it. I don't know if I'll review it.
I was just.
It's only 112 pages. We could all get knocked that out.
We could probably all just review it in a week.
Please don't.
Add that to the schedule.
Please don't sign me up for any additional responsibilities at this point. I'm not sure I can take them.
What else we have going on?
The BAFTA Cymru Awards were held.
Cymru.
And the Gunpowder Plot triumphed, won the Digital Creativity and Games Prize. Unfortunately, Doctor Who and Sarah Jane Adventures lost out in everything else that they were nominated in. So it was the one bright spot for Doctor Who.
Have you guys played Gunpowder Plot yet?
I have not.
Sean?
No.
We need to set up one on our schedule. This is for you. Down the road. Not soon. But we should set up a games review.
Oh, yeah. That'd be good.
And I know that you did Eternity Clock, but Sean and I should sit down and play it at least a little bit.
And there's enough adventure games that all three of us could do.
Yeah, absolutely. We could each do one.
Yeah.
So we should do that.
It's on the eventual schedule.
It is.
Yeah. Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, I was like,
it's on the non-canonical schedule.
The non-canonical part of the schedule. I always thought games would be
what do they call it? Arcana?
The Elseworlds schedule?
No, it's not Elseworlds. Arcana is like those ones that are like part of the canon, but not officially part of the canon yet. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Days of Future Yet to Be.
Right. And our last bit of news this week?
BBC Home America has announced a spectacular 41-DVD package, simply titled The Doctor Who Limited Edition Gift Set.
This is, I should just bite the bullet and get this, because I still have not bought any of the DVDs.
Plus, you'll get some extras, because this includes the first six series since 2005, all of David Tennant's specials, a sonic screwdriver, a comic book, a series of postcard illustrations, kind of like what came in series 5, featuring each of the doctors, and a disc including the BBC America specials, The Women of Doctor Who, The Timey-Wimey Stuff of Doctor Who, and The Destinations of Doctor Who. I don't know why the fourth of the
three. Yeah, there
three,
was four of those.
I don't know why it's not included.
The Science of Doctor Who, no.
Yeah, it was The Science.
Science was the other one. That's the one they haven't included.
There's no science in Doctor Who.
There's no science. Maybe they realized that.
they just came out with
special
another one
and went.
Really, this should be a 5 special disc, because Doctor Who in the USA, or Doctor Who in the US,
yeah,
just aired this past week.
That's right.
But the price point on its pre-order Amazon is $220. List price is $250.
Now keep in mind, that's 40.
That's 41 discs.
41 discs
think
for $200.
Think about it this way: is
unfortunately it's also list, DVD only.
The list price on Series 1 right now is still $70.
Mm-hmm.
So once you've bought two of those, that's $140. Once you've bought three of those, I mean,
it's cheaper,
this is still
than, buying
cheaper
everything.
Than buying all of them separately, which unfortunately is what I'm going to end up doing, because I'll probably ask for them for Christmas, and that's how I'll get them. But
well, you just
and
ask,
giving them you.
Well, I'm asking
just
for the set
for the,
this year.
No, you ask for the Best Buy gift card, and then whatever you don't get from your various Best Buy gift cards, you chip in the remainder and you go buy it for yourself.
Yeah, that's true.
I'll probably do that.
That's how that works.
It's got some pretty cool packaging, too.
What's packaging look like?
It's packaging you toss out afterwards, because they're all individually packaged in there.
Yeah.
So you still have them all on your shelf, like everyone else. You just get kind of a cool box to put
them
in.
I do like the picture
I
on
like
the spine.
I like the box. That's pretty neat. Yeah, I do too. I wouldn't throw the box away. I'd
save the box.
Glenn would put it on the shelf and display it backwards so that you couldn't see any
my
of the spines.
My question now, though, is that all DVD?
Yes, it's only DVD.
Only DVD.
So there's no Blu-ray.
No Blu-ray
in there at all, even from Series 5 and 6.
Correct.
See, then that's or less appealing to me now, because I want what's available on Blu-ray.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely.
And the specials, I guess, were on Blu-ray, too.
Yeah. Because they didn't start HD until Planet of the Dead, I believe.
I think you're right.
Which next Doctor you can't tell on the Blu-ray that it's not
but
HD.
My thought is, even though here's the thing is that goes back to that whole mentality that Blu-ray is for HD, and that's not true.
No, it's not.
I mean, they totally could fit more of the stories on Blu-ray and sell it for cheaper.
Well, then maybe you should just wait.
Yeah, maybe I should.
Maybe they will once we finally.
Maybe I should just go out and buy the specials, series 5 and series 6
on Blu-ray.
And Blu-ray, and then wait, see if they release it.
Because maybe once they finally give us Terror of the Zygons, and we get an announce date for it, then they'll go back into Entertainment and say, okay, here's the William Hartnell years.
Oh, yeah, I hope they don't do that as much as I spent on DVDs. I know that's where they're going to go, but that's the only logical way to go. Yeah, it's the only logical way to go.
I'm not sure if this set includes
I don't think it's logical at all,
part
really.
One or not.
Why wouldn't it be logical?
Just because of the way the episodes were broken up to create those individual story arcs. Grouping them together in a season is counterproductive for what they'd want to do.
It makes sense to me for Classic Who. Each story arc is a disc.
But here's the thing, yes. DVD's already becoming old and passé. People don't buy DVDs much anymore, especially with the advent of Blu-ray players. So it totally makes sense for them to release them on Blu-ray for those people that were ready to start their collections now. And if you're going to do it, I think you do it seasonal. I say, here's the William Hartnell collection. You still keep them separated and categorized based on the story arcs as they are, but release them in a Blu-ray set, because there's people that are going to want those Blu-rays.
That
and
would
they
help sales for some
convert.
Stories
I mean,
that wouldn't sell as well as
they
others.
They weren't shot in HD, yes. But you can fit more information on there. You can put more extras on there.
Or, as they tend to do, take extras away, which makes no sense to me.
Having just rewatched Planet of the Apes,
I put all of the extras
it looks phenomenal on Blu-ray. I would imagine Doctor Who would, too.
Well,
but it wasn't shot in HD, either.
No, no. You're misunderstanding. Anything on film can be converted to an uprate of HD quality. Anything that was shot on, in their case, PAL television broadcast quality is not shot in HD. Yeah. It's not even shot on film. For the most part, it's, I guess some of it was back in the BBC in that day, but a lot of that was videotaped. Mm-hmm. So there's no amount of converting that
wouldn't make a difference
to HD. Yeah. Exactly.
I imagine
so
the conversations
could be translated to HD, but beyond that, you can't do that.
The conversations around the BBC campfire at the time, you know, were you know, well, what do we want to shoot this show on? And it wasn't a question of what looks better, you know, real film versus 35 millimeter versus this.
What's cheapest?
It was what's going to burn better. Because eventually we're going to junk these, and we want to make sure we get a big fire.
I wouldn't think they would start with Hartnell, though, on Blu-ray.
I wouldn't think they would either. Nah, they'd go with
Baker.
Popular stuff.
Yeah, they'd go Tom Baker.
They'd go with Baker first if they were going to do it. And really, it would be weird. It would be like, hey, look, the first Doctor Who Blu-ray is out of the classic series, and it's season 14. Okay.
I'd almost rather see them, if they, especially... They wouldn't be able to do this maybe earlier on, but later do the Sarah Jane years. Tom Baker and Sarah Jane. Pertwee and Sarah Jane. Separate sets.
Unfortunately, it wouldn't work
when it comes to Davidson.
I never like gimmick production. And they do that because there are, like Star Trek did that with on their DVD sets. X-Files did that on their DVD sets, where they lumped things together based on theme. Because they knew there were people out there that weren't completists. They knew there were people that they could hook. I don't like that, because then you get a whole series of stuff that's just based on a topic and has nothing to do with the chronology of the matter.
But it would still be chronological, just based off of chronological. Based off of companions.
You realize you just described our podcast, right? It's all
and
gimmick.
There's a precedent already set for it with BBC America or BBC Universal or Worldwide, and I think it's To Entertain with the David Tennant years.
With the David Tennant years?
The box set. It's all of David Tennant, even the animated stuff.
Well, yeah, but it's from one end to the other. So,
yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. The companions, one end to the other.
Well, Sarah Jane would be the only... Well, I see.
The show is not called The Companions of the Doctor.
Well,
the show is
called
Doctor Who. That's true. So that's where you'd base it on, is the Doctor.
The Doctor.
Right. That's your focal point.
And then they'd have to break up Tom Baker in several sets in order to do it that way.
Oh, yeah. 7 years worth of... Well, seven sets, if you did it based
on
season.
A year, yeah.
That I could see them doing. I would, if you're going to do it this way, I'd rather see a season set than here's Tom Baker Volume 1, the Sarah Jane years,
right,
from
right,
Robot
exactly.
up to Hand of Fear, and then here's Tom Baker,
right? Because
Volume 2,
she didn't even leave at the end of the season. She left.
Yeah, she left
in the middle
of
the season.
And then, you know, here's Volume 2, which is Leela, and then Volume 3. Which,
that's my point, is
yeah.
you would break up seasons.
Yeah,
that,
you would.
That doesn't work very well, for me anyway.
But
anyway, we're talking about something that's total speculation. Let's move on to feedback.
Feedback. We've got some feedback. This is the mood version of the song, because we're all kind of down today.
Are you guys really down?
The pawns are gone.
Oh. Such a fitting ending.
You have no hearts.
Such a fitting ending. It was so wonderfully done. It was
very well done. It was still heartbreaking.
It was tearful, but it was... All right. Anyway, our first bit of feedback comes from... Ben.
Ben writes, "Hello, guys. Just listened to the podcast and just had a thought about the fob watch somebody on Facebook spotted in the pawns house. What if it's not Rory's, but Amy's? Could she be the Doctor's daughter / Jenny? It would explain why in the Big Bang, when the Doctor is erased from existence, she suddenly has parents." What do you guys want to tackle that?
Yes. There was a police box in
The Doctor, the Widow, and the Wardrobe.
The Doctor, the Widow, and the Wardrobe that was just a police box.
That's all I'm going to say.
I was going to poke a hole in the actual theory part, and the fact that they pretty much outright say throughout the season, why don't you remember your parents? Because they were swallowed by the crack. So when the crack is gone, parents return. When history is reset, parents return.
I'm going to poke a hole in the Fobwatch theory just from the standpoint that we now have reached the end of Amy and Rory's time on. And it turned out that they weren't either one of them the master. So, you know, now maybe Moffat will surprise us 2 years from now and bring them back, but I don't think so. I think that ship has sailed.
You don't think they're going to come back for the 50th?
I think it's too soon.
I think it's too soon.
I bet they do.
It'd be easily done.
I'm going to put it on the table right now that I think they'll be back for the 50th.
Do you think they'll actually be back for the 50th, or do you think they'll be back like
they'll be five, back the in, five they'll doctors. Be back in a story in the 50th anniversary year.
So not
year,
like a fake
they will
hologram
be back for a story in
so
the 50th
now we, you're saying we might get something that's actually set in 1939 Manhattan, then the story of them publishing
Rivers'
book or something that doesn't have anything to do with anything else.
Not
that's
necessarily.
Going on.
They could figure out a way to pluck them out. They figured out a way to get into there with all these time anomalies anyway.
Yeah.
So
Rivery had no problem.
Exactly,
apparently.
And she has. Yeah, apparently you get in there with a vortex manipulator with no problem. So
it's a motorcycle through traffic.
See, that's what I'm saying. There's ways in and out of there. So it's like Rose's universe. We plucked Rose off into a universe.
That's what I said.
A pocket universe, or not pocket universe, a parallel universe, and said there's no way she could possibly come back. And what happened?
Two years later,
she's back. I have no doubt that the pawns are not returning.
Are not returning?
Are returning. I have no doubt that the pawns are returning.
Okay.
All right.
We'll find out. Everybody set your chronometers. Check in with us at episode 971.
Phil, if you're listening, mark the Glenn I told you so kid box. So that
flash forward, episode
971. He's the one that's always champion.
I told you they'd be big.
We're not doing that this week. Phil's always championing my I told you so's. So.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm. All right. Next bit of feedback comes from... Oh, Ben still has
Ben
more.
So he wrote in two separate emails. This one says, "Hello, yet again. Apologies if my previous messages seemed rushed. It's because they were. I was writing on my breaks at work. I had been listening to your podcast for a few months, since July, I think. I went back and listened to your reviews of all the season 6 episodes. I am relatively new to Doctor Who. My first episode was The 11th Hour, and I have since caught up with all the new series episodes, and am now considering picking up the movie and maybe some classic episodes because of your reviews. Any suggestions? Again, keep up the great work with the podcast."
Definitely go with the movie.
Definitely.
Because even if you... This is going to come out wrong, and Sean's probably going to smack me across the table. But even if you're one of those people that poo-poo the movie, it still is that nice transition back to the classic era. Because the movie still has kind of that late 20th, early 21st century style that I think that the new series is done in vain, the vein that it's done in. So it still has kind of that feel, and it's still kind of a gateway both ways. If you're coming from classic to new or from new backwards to classic, I think it's kind of that middle ground. So I think it works. So definitely go to the movie because it's one of those things that my wife, she sees me watch classic Doctor Who. It's on in the living room while she's, you know, doing something, taking around the computer or doing something in there. She sees it. She has absolutely no desire to watch classic Who, but she loves the new series. However, it's one of those things that I could probably show to my wife and she would enjoy it. So, it's that gateway. Now, beyond that, there's some classic Who. I don't know where to start you with some of that.
I forget how many episodes ago it was that we did our kind of top five for new viewers, classic Who episodes or ones that we'd recommend. And I think the multi-doc stories, the Three Doctors and the Five Doctors for sure were on there.
Those are good because they give you enough of a taste of different doctors.
It's a doctor sampler platter.
There you go.
I would say
I'm still going with Kay's Avengers. It's just so well done. It's such a it, the It's so well written.
And every time you say that, so Keith gives me well this kick written. Under the table because it's not on the schedule yet.
It is so well written. It is so well acted. It is so well
done. Chrissy probably so screams, well yes!
Yeah.
I still go back Chrissy's to that. Even though that's one of those that's on every Doctor Who fan's top of list, I would still introduce a newbie to that. Even though it's the end of an era. It's the end of an era, but
I would maybe.
So is the movie, for that matter.
Yeah.
Sylvester McCoy passes the torch in that one.
The end of Sylvester.
Depending on which of the classic monsters revisited in the new series you like the best.
That's a good one.
I don't know if I'd recommend, if you like the Daleks, going back and watching the Daleks for your first story.
I would recommend that one. That's a good one.
But, I mean, it's just so daunting. Know how long it is, but going into it.
We're going to bag on that for all.
But if you like the Silurians, watch the Silurians. If you like the Sontarans, go back and watch the first Sontaran story, I think. Or if there's if you liked Sarah Jane a lot, go back and watch her first stories.
Yeah.
I think those are great gateways into classic Who.
And it's fun that they've given us enough of these little doorway glimpses in the new series that a fan could look at and go, well, how did that get started? Or mm-hmm. I'd like to know more about this person, or who's this Brig that they keep talking about?
Yes.
Go back and find one of the stories and start there and see what all the fuss is about.
If for some reason you really latched on to Autons, go back and watch Frontier in Space. Or not Frontier in Space. Spearhead in Space.
Yeah, I agree. I will forever, of course, champion Seeds of Death because of one man. And one man alone.
Scorby!
Now, I agree with Keith. Go back, and if there's certain monsters you like, go back.
Or Sarah Jane. Sarah Jane. A great introduction. You know,
Daleks, go back and watch any of the Daleks episodes. Silurians, go back and watch any of the Autons. Macro, go back and watch. Oh, wait.
if you're daunted by the episode length of the Daleks, maybe try Genesis.
Yeah.
Well, but Genesis is only one part less.
Well, it's still a good...
Slightly
longer than a two-parter, that's a good step into the longer.
If you're really daunted by the length of some of these, this is the beauty of them, is...
Pause.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're broken up in half-hour episode format, so watch a couple episodes and then go do something else and come back to it later if you really... I mean, that's what we did with the War Games. We broke it into two parts and did five here and five there. It worked great. So
yeah. I've said many times that I'll go back and I'll watch Doctor Who in pieces. I'll go back and watch an episode or two of one story, and then the next day or even several days later, watch another one and watch another one. Because I've always maintained that Doctor Who is done in those lengths of episodes for a reason. I mean, that's how they were shown.
Yeah.
So sometimes I enjoy going back and doing those in that way instead of sitting down and trying to watch an entire story. Now, sometimes you get so sucked into the story that you stick around and you just keep going. But, yeah, don't weigh yourself down in something like that. That's how I introduced Caitlin to him, is we'll watch a little bit at a time. We'll watch an episode here, an episode there, and then she's suddenly seen the whole story. So,
and I think that's a great sign of a classic Who story when – you get so sucked into it, you don't want to stop.
That's true.
Like, that's true. So many of these, we watch in marathons on Friday Night Who, but watching on my own, I could probably stop after a couple episodes and come back.
Yeah.
All right, moving along.
Up next.
Thank you very much, Ben.
Yes. Chuck.
Chuck.
Chuck is next.
Chuck writes, comment question, hello everybody. I have two comments on the power of three. One, the chicken dance, the birdie song, is one of the traditional songs played during Oktoberfest. Incidentally, Oktoberfest was last weekend, so the song choice was very appropriate. I only realize this because I live in Cincinnati, the record holder for the world's largest chicken dance. Some people here are proud of that.
And if anybody's confused, Oktoberfest kicked off last week.
I was about to say, I think it's odd that Oktoberfest is in September.
Oktoberfest kicked off in Munich, Germany last week, and at other venues around the world.
Yes.
In fact, I think Hayes, Kansas does an Oktoberfest every year, but Epcot in Disney World does an Oktoberfest as well that coincides. But Yeah, Oktoberfest is to celebrate October, and
it's a month long celebration.
I don't know that it goes the whole month. Maybe not. It goes into October. Yeah.
For all of you in Cincinnati who are proud of having the world's largest chicken dance, I salute you. You go, Grass. That's just awesome. Number two, the random defibrillator in the hall was not as far-fetched as you might think. I work at the Information Services Clinical Engineering Service desk at a hospital. About a month ago, a security guard called in because he found a defibrillator lying in an empty waiting room in the middle of the night. We still don't know where it came from or who it belongs to. Also, defibrillators and other medical equipment are often positioned around hospitals for emergency reasons.
Okay, can I ask you guys, did we bring up the fact that there was a random defibrillator?
I don't think we did.
Because I wouldn't have said that.
I think other people might have.
Because my wife works for she works for a hospital, but she works in one of the clinics, and every floor of the clinic has a defibrillator. Every floor of the hospital has a defibrillator, so I wouldn't have thought that random.
I may have mentioned that I thought it was conveniently placed. That it was. Well, here's the deal, though. If a defibrillator is
they're in a hospital,
yeah, but if it's
I have no problem with it.
For example, if it's on the wall, okay,
it was.
No, it was in a shopping cart.
It was sitting on the floor.
It was just lying there, like with a little sign over that said, "Please pick me up and use in case of an emergency with a two-hearted alien that needs it."
It wasn't in a shopping cart. It was on a crash cart.
Yeah, whatever
it was. That's what they're called, crash carts.
Well, it looked like somebody.
And it's a hospital, so they were probably wheeling it somewhere else when they got distracted.
Looked like somebody had crashed to the cart because it was this big jumble of stuff.
It probably was because there was a lot of chaos.
I think it wasn't weird that there was a defibrillator. I didn't think it was weird. I just thought it was a little. Oh, lucky you. There's a defibrillator there. Yeah, a little convenient. No. Anyway,
if it wasn't in a hospital, if they're on a construction site somewhere, or if they were running, I might have.
An office building, and it was on a crash.
No, because I've seen defibrillators in office buildings.
They're in office buildings, but if it had been just conveniently across the hall,
just laying in the hall.
The most convenient one I've ever seen was playing Left 4 Dead when I got killed by the zombies, and there happened to be a defibrillator like two yards further up, and Mel grabbed it and resuscitated me. That was probably awesome.
Should have spawned there,
but it didn't have to.
That's true.
Is your zombie apocalypse quote for the week. Chuck goes on. Thanks for the entertaining podcast. The best thing about it is that you guys give us honest, personal opinions about each Doctor Who story you review. You do not just follow the general fan opinions. Some other reviewers sound as if they're simply reading from an episode review guide written in the 90s by an angry fan. I vote for less Sonic Screwdriver as the easy problem solver. Maybe J&T was right about this. Chuck Gears.
Thanks for writing in, Chuck.
I was reading your last comment there, Chuck. That's awesome. Yes, thank you very much for writing. It's always nice to hear from new people. Go Cincinnati and chicken
dancing.
I've never been to Cincinnati, Ohio. I know of Cincinnati through WKRP. That's pretty much my extent of it. So I can say that I honestly learned something new about the culture of Ohio today.
I'm trying to remember if I went through Cincinnati or not.
Some people are proud of the chicken dance there. World's largest.
You went through Cincinnati.
I think it was Cleveland. I lived in Ohio for like 2 months.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You didn't know that?
No. Wow.
Chillicothe, Ohio.
Chillicothe?
Chillicothe.
It's a very small town.
This explains so much about your psyche.
I was going to recording school there.
What's recording school?
Where you learn how to record bands music and stuff.
I thought you meant like play a recorder like the Second Doctor.
No. I wish I could learn that.
When you played your recorder, did a little orange man come out and take kids off to the toffee stretching center?
I'm learning new things about you. Yes. Why did you go to recording school?
I wanted to be a recording art or not a recording, you, a recording producer.
Why did you drop out of recording school?
No, I completed.
Oh.
I came back to Topeka. One of the things they talked about was doing sound for television.
So it was a 2 month.
It was a 2 month school.
Oh, okay.
So you started in Topeka. How old were you when you did this?
Right after high school.
So you started in Topeka in high
school. So I was.
Well, you came back, worked for a TV station,
and I'm still.
And you ran sound for a while.
Yes.
Too.
So I did that part, and then I moved on elsewhere into the industry. Of course, I got the job thinking, oh, I can save up money so I can go move to a town where there's actually recording studios.
Sure.
Do you still harbor that desire?
Not so much.
But it's something you could fall back on.
It is. I'd need a refresher hardcore.
Because it's either that because or a teaching been, degree.
Because it's been 10 years now.
That's funny. I can't. It's funny that all the different jobs you've been through in TV, and I've been like in two.
Yeah,
of course I've been at the same station the whole time too. So
you were there when they invented.
But
tube. Wait, when they invented the tube, what? Yeah,
I remember you came,
television tube.
You came home and we're all like, hey, they brought this box in and it had this weird picture on it.
Granted, half of the jobs I've had in TV. Has been at the same station.
Yeah, that's true. Because you only produced at the other one, right? No, you photogged.
No, I photogged.
You photogged at KTK.
I've only officially done three positions.
And now both stations are in the same building.
it worked out.
Was there a little angry recognition on your part when they met?
A little bit.
They moved all the stuff in and you're like, you.
It was more of vindication. I'm like, yes, I'm on top.
I got here first.
Guess what? I've got seniority.
Okay, for the listeners that don't know, Keith and I worked for many years. We worked many years ago together
for
at
2 years.
KS&T, yes. Which is a station we technically work for now. We worked for 2 years together.
I left for 3 years to go to an ABC, the
which
ABC
was a competitor
affiliate
at the time,
and then. I got let go there, went and worked at another job, and came back to
KS&T. And what was the other job you worked at?
I sold it on eBay.
No, not that one.
No, that's the one in between. I was working at 49 at ABC while I worked with you at CD3
Post.
That's
right.
And then he came back.
And then I came back.
And then the other station moved in with us and merged with us, so now they're all together. So there you go. Crash course in our history.
Not to be confused with a crash cart and a defibrillator.
That's right. Way to bring it back around, Sean.
Working hard on that.
Our next bit of feedback comes from?
Dan.
Dan.
Dan's he got sent a bit in of some audio.
Very good. Let's have a listen now.
Well, good evening, gentlemen of the Vortex. This is Dan from Central Illinois. I know it's been a while since I've written to you or sent anything to you. Kind of a quick review on all the episodes we've seen so far. On the first episode, when they promised us Daleks of all kinds and flashed us a giant Dalek, if you were a bit disappointed with the way that turned out, if I could refer you to an online comic put together by a guy or a group that goes by the name of Mechmasters, go into your search engine and just type in Dalek Second Empire. Pull it up. I don't think you're going to be disappointed. It's got some action packed in it. It's got a lot of comedy in there. And it hits on a lot of the old sci-fi tropes of, well, pick your movie or your genre, and I'm sure you're going to find a hidden joke in there somewhere. And some of them are just blatant. They've got an online animation version of it started up on YouTube. The animation isn't bad, but the voiceover work is just a little rough yet. But start with the comics, and there's over 500 pages of it now, so this might be able to get us through the hump till Christmas after the angels take Manhattan. Dinosaurs on a spaceship. Seems like you guys keep looking at why the Doctor needed the Big Game Hunter, and why he was still at the Indian Space Agency. He was looking at that board, and looking at all the scans of the ship, and the scans had revealed, well, I'm going to assume now, the large animals. And he had said something to the effect of, well, that's interesting, and I know someone who'd like that. So, a town called Mercy. I was going to kick in something with the Universal Soldier, but it seems like you guys and pretty much every other podcast had picked up on that too. However, nobody has mentioned the Mike Tyson face tattoo. So does that mean Iron Mike is also a color? Not sure. Your guess. Power of three. Not much to say on that, but when you guys come up with those traveling the vortex cubes, you know, the ones that do the chicken dance song, I want those for everybody on my Christmas list. Just let me know, and, well, if I send them out, I might lose a lot of the people on my Christmas card list, but on second thought, yeah, by all means, let me know when I can buy those right away. Now, I'm intentionally trying to get all this out before the Angels Take Manhattan starts up tonight. So, I don't know if I'm going to give you any feedback on that, but I will send you some feedback on the Sonic Screwdriver bit, so. Alright guys, thanks again for the Friday Night Who and the great podcast, so we'll check in with you later. Bye.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Dan.
And he did send in feedback for the Sonic Screwdriver, but we're saving that for next week.
We will play it on next week's show.
Yes, we will.
And we'll get some of those boxes out to you with the chicken dance in it.
As soon as we can.
Trademark Traveling the Vortex 2012.
Our next bit of feedback comes from Alex.
Yes.
That's me.
Yes.
Alex writes, "Hey guys, me again. It's been a long time since I wrote you, hasn't it? Sorry about that. I'm not really sure how it happened. I've been a couple of episodes behind now since the beginning of summer, but I finally caught up again around when Asylum of the Daleks aired because I really wanted to know what you guys thought of it. It was only when I thought about it that I realized it had been way back earlier in the year, around when you did your interview with Simon Fisher Becker, that I last sent you feedback. Anyway, I'm all caught up on the podcast now, so hopefully I'll be writing in a little more regularly. On the Power of Three, I very much enjoyed most of this story. Everything concerning the relationship between the pawns and the Doctor was wonderful, particularly Amy and the Doctor's talk outside the Tower of London. I think that it was the best scene Chris Chibnall has ever written for Who. Glenn, as for your theory on Moffat training Chibnall up to be the next head writer of the show, I'm more inclined to believe that Mark Gatiss, will be the one taking the mantle of showrunner when Moffat leaves. After all, Moffat and Gatiss are firm friends, having worked together both on Who and on Sherlock, and Gatiss has written 4 stories for New Who, plus he'll be writing 2 more for the second part of Series 7. Which is a large amount of stories for a guest writer. Sorry, minor tangent there. As I was saying, the dramatic of having the Doctor stay with the pawns was very enjoyable to watch on screen and was made even more wonderful by the return of Brian, who really would be a perfect companion. Doesn't time fly when you're alone with your thoughts? I also absolutely love Gemma Redgrave as Kate Stewart. She was a fantastic character, and her connection to the brig only improved my estimations of her. I hope and expect we'll be seeing more of her, and, though I prefer it when the show keeps away from present-day Earth as much as possible, I would be completely fine with a few more modern-day episodes if it means spending a little more time with UNIT's new scientific advisor. As for the cubes, they were a very interesting and unusual treat, and the tension that built up through the episode meant that by the end of it, these little black boxes, were rather threatening. However, here comes my one big complaint with the episode, and I mean big complaint. The ending of the story, with the resolution of what the cubes were and what they were doing, was beyond anticlimactic. The Shockery were introduced, set up as Gallifreyan legend, and then immediately proceeded to be the most ineffectual villain in all of Who history. The grill-mouthed orderlies were unexplained and... explained what were they and why were they kidnapping people from the hospital. And the Doctor's solving of the conflict by pointing the sonic screwdriver at a thingamabob until everything's okay again was utterly unacceptable. If there is ever fuel to be found for the fire of the sonic gets overused, it's here. I don't generally have an issue with the sonic having a wide array of functions. It is, after all, the Swiss Army knife of the universe. But in this story... it is used not just to further the plot, but to resolve it, and that, I think, is a line which shouldn't be crossed as far as the Sonic's usefulness is concerned. Oh, by the way, here's a fun little tidbit you guys might have noticed. In the scene from The Power of Three, where the Doctor, Amy, and Rory are hiding out under Henry VIII's bed following their unfortunate trip to Savoy, if you look closely, you can see Rory is holding his phone charger. In a town called Mercy, Rory comments that the anachronistic electricity in the town is only a few years out, to which the Doctor replies, "That's what you said when you left the phone charger in Henry VIII's suite." Plus, the clothes they are wearing in a town called Mercy match their outfits from the under-the-bed scene in The Power of Three. Ergo, a town called Mercy takes place in the 7 weeks Amy and Rory are away in The Power of Three.
This might explain why, in the first half of the episode, the Doctor is very manic and shouty, perhaps is for the wimps. Oh, patience. Excuse me, patience is for the wimps. Or it's for wimps. Excuse me. Let me start that again. Patience is for wimps. But much more relaxed and friendly following on from his 7 weeks away. He had that confrontation with Amy about Mercy, and it's drastically altered his worldview. Just something to think about.
I like it.
I'm glad you pointed that out, because I'd
seen a picture online.
Oh, had you?
And okay. I thought, oh, that could work. But I didn't put that much thought into it of why his mood shifts halfway through.
Sean, had you noticed?
I had not noticed. I'm glad Alex did. I will be going back to double-check his facts, but I suspect he's right.
And, Sean is a fact-checker.
And well, not as much as Chrissy. And I'm thrilled, because suddenly that just, you know, we're dealing with the whole timeline of the Pawns throughout this season, and I like the fact that that not-so-subtle hint, apparently, was dropped in there to specifically right. say things are happening out of order, which is yeah. what we suspected. So, yeah.
Although Absolutely. Part of me wonders if that was shot and wasn't, maybe it wasn't intended, but they had it and decided to put it in. Like, it was more of a production accident and people are retconning it in their mind. It makes me wonder. How much is planned out?
No, it was done on purpose.
I like the idea that it's done on purpose. I just am skeptical.
It was done on purpose.
About the idea.
That's Sean's final thought. All right, he goes on to write, as for the main event, the Angels take Manhattan. Not really sure how to start this one, so let me just say I really loved it and thought there were only two main problems, which I'll get to in a moment. The Angels were very creepy, as ever, especially when they started smiling, and the baby cherub angels were the scariest part of the episode for me. I also really liked the idea of the battery farm, and the thought that the angels were taking over Manhattan statues and converting them into new angels was very sinister. Seeing River back was lovely, and I liked that she played a smaller role here than her stories in the last series. It's nice to have River in an episode without her being the driving force behind it. I agree. The acting from the leads was all outstanding. Matt Smith breaking down in the graveyard was very moving, and I'll admit that I was very teary-eyed, and I don't think I've been that upset by an episode since 10 left. Karen Gillan and Arthur Darvill were equally excellent, and their scene on the roof of the Winter Key Apartments is simply up there among one of the best moments as companions. Now, I don't want to linger on my problems for too long, but I do have to talk about them. Firstly, the Statue of Liberty Angel, which seriously cool, but didn't really do anything for the story, and felt as though it could be chucked in at the last minute without any thought to how it could affect the plot. Secondly, while Amy's goodbye was very touching and dramatic and nostalgic, everything a good send-off should be, Roy's was, well, pretty much non-existent. The angel gets in before anybody realizes what's going on, and the last line and final appearance are used for shock value, and whilst the impact of his sudden loss was very powerful, I felt like it was a bit of a weak exit for a character who I've grown to love over the past 2 years. Roy is just as important a character as Amy, and he deserved the same big finish as she did. As it was, I feel like he was given a bad deal here, with the episode's ending focusing a little too single-mindedly on just Amy. Anyway, aside from those two issues, I loved everything about this episode, and I felt it was a suitably grandiose last adventure for the Pawns. It's sad to see them go, but I'm already looking forward to JLC's return at Christmas. Hear, hear. That's all for me now. Can't wait to hear what you guys thought, and, of course, what the other listeners have to say about the half-season finale. Happy traveling, Alex. Very good.
Thanks, Alex. Very well said.
You bring up some points I was going to bring up, just different reasons. Next up, Andrew. Andrew writes, common question, hello all. After all those people writing in to defend a town called Mercy, I felt the need to write in defense of your criticisms.
Wow, they rarely do that.
Yeah. This is a first. I'm not quite sure how to feel about it.
I really wish more people would understand that TV is not a set of scales with bad points canceling out good ones. Think of a car. The engine being great does not make up for the headlights not working. Nor does it be...
I think I own that one.
Nor does it being enjoyable mean that the flaws aren't there. Battlefield's a good example of this. It's a god-awful mess caused by deleted scenes and budget problems, but it's still a huge fun to watch. It's still huge fun to watch.
I was just saying, I was looking at it going, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. Okay, it's still huge fun to watch. I got you.
And it's in that vein I have to comment on The Angels Take Manhattan. There's a lot to like about in this episode. Some very clever ideas with the baby angels. But there's two big problems. Apparently there's two big problems in the story. Unfortunately, it's at the start and the end. The pre-title sequence spoils the main part of the episode. Meeting Dr. Grail and going to Winter Key. The person finding the room with the older self in it and the Statue of Liberty being an angel. By showing us all this in advance, it cripples the impact of Rory discovering the same things. The moment when Rory lands outside the Winter Key, it just becomes a case of waiting for him to retrace the steps already taken by Detective Gardner. There's no suspense, and it throws an unnecessary spanner in the works of the plot. How does a chapter written by Detective Gardner, the dying detective, make it into River Song's book? If it had been me, I would have dropped the Detective Gardner altogether and just ended the pre-title sequence with Rory finding himself in 1930s New York. Only problem there, you would have came in 5 minutes short.
We could have run through corridors or something.
As for the ending...
I don't know, I'd like more moments with Rory and Amy on the roof.
I think so,
too. I thought that was incredible.
Yeah. As for the ending, it's not just that it's a bit contrived. Phew, we killed the angels. Oh no, there's one left. Zap. But it's also nonsensical. I understand that the Doctor can't ever go back to New York... But I can't see any reasons that the pawns need to stay there. Why couldn't they get a train to Washington or some other place a safe distance away and have the doctor pick them up? If we're really budget to say that it's the entire period of history, 1938 to whenever Amy dies, that the doctor is unable to go back to, then it's really short-sighted thing to do, as it prevents any more stories set in the bulk of the 20th century. No more Churchill, no Beatles, no Cold War, no space race, no rock and roll, etc. I would like to point out that the Doctor says earlier on that they would be transported 30 to 40 years before 1938 in order for them to be old and die in 1938.
Oh. That was after they'd been there, though, and got zapped from 38 back.
That's true, so we don't know when they were zapped.
Well, he's talking about the end, when they get zapped by the angel at the end in 2008 and wind up back in 38.
Assuming they
end up... They do end up back in 38, though, because he says that now 38 they can't go back to.
I guess they didn't explain that enough to
me. I agree with Andrew. It doesn't make a lick of sense that they couldn't get on a train and go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Because the way the entire episode is constructed, I get the feeling that the temporal distortion is around New York 1938.
More proof to the fact that the pawns will be back in the 50th anniversary year.
He finishes out his email saying, ignoring these faults, I would score the episode at 8 or 9 out of 10. But with that ending, with the big surprises spoiled by the pre-title sequence, it's a 4 or 5. Which, I go back to my initial point, is a perfect example of why people shouldn't try to assign a simple numeric value to a story. As always, regards and thanks for all the free entertainment you provide, Andrew.
We're doing this for free?
I didn't know that.
Oh, I'm not getting paid for this?
Let's see my contract. Let's all Andrew get up and walk away from the table and leave like 10 minutes of silence in the middle of the episode.
Yeah.
And see how long people actually continue to listen.
Yeah, see if they start sending money.
Yeah, buying stuff on our Amazon store.
You're implying that people aren't buying stuff on our Amazon
store? I have no idea.
If you would like this show to continue, you'll go right now to the Traveling the Vortex Amazon store at www.travelingthevortex.com and click on that link and order something. Now it feels like Doctor Who, because you're watching those Omnibus editions on KCPT and getting hit with the pledge drive right in the middle of it.
If you'd like to support PBS.
For only $60, like I can get the disappearing TARDIS mug.
Never mind, it's $30 in the store.
But you couldn't get it. This was the only... You're so...
You missed out on the I days out when on you couldn't this. Get
you
Dr.
are
Who
so privileged because we've suffered through this. There was no merchandise in the store.
And you know how they got it? It was swag. They got it for free. And they gave it away for $60. Oh, no. Excuse me.
A $60 pledge.
$60 pledge.
Thank you, Andrew. Yeah, we'll probably touch on some of those points as well when we review Andrew. No, not Andrew Takes Manhattan.
I thought you said Amy Takes Manhattan.
Amy Takes Manhattan.
That's a whole different story. Holly writes in next.
Holly writes, dear guys, or hey guys, hello guys, something guys.
Or just guys.
Just guys. Guys, Mikey. Saying goodbye to the pond. What? I was there, I had it composed, and you had to throw it off. Yeah, he's got. I can't do it. Saying goodbye to the Ponds on Saturday was pretty tough. Well, saying goodbye to them on Monday was really tough. That was the part of the weekend that sucked the most. Because being in Tennessee and knowing that I can't watch it.
We've watched almost all of these as a quote unquote family.
Yeah,
I'm glad we didn't watch this one together.
Really?
Yeah, I.
Did you embarrass yourself?
I was a bit embarrassed by myself.
Okay, we'll get there.
And I know Sarah would have been slightly embarrassed by the tears falling from the episode if other people were around. Anyways, continue.
Were they her tears or yours?
Hers. Really? She cried quite a bit, too.
Hey, guys. Saying goodbye to the Ponds on Saturday was pretty tough. The Angels were back to their creepy and scary blink best. The baby angels had to be the scariest of them all in this episode. To tangent, for just a moment, I would recommend the Doctor Who book, Touched by an Angel, by Jonathan Morris. It, like the title, deals with the angels and their use of time energy. Back to the episode. It was nice to see River again. The scenes in the hotel room with Amy and older Rory, and then the rooftop scene between the Ponds had me tearing up. When the paradox happened and they were back to where they were, the Ponds and the Doctor started this trip, I got the same feeling I did during the ending of the End of Time Part 2. The feeling that, hey, maybe things will be okay. And then the other shoe drops. Like, you know who it's going to. We have yet another reference to the Doctor and how he shouldn't travel alone, which after what's happened, I agree. I think him losing Amy and Rory will take him quite a long time to get over. I'll wrap it up here. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts on this episode. Keep up the great work. Holly from Wisconsin. Thank you very much, Holly. And I'm not quite sure when, but Touched by an Angel, I think, is one of the ones that we decided that would be... You're going to review that one on the next...
I'm going to read that next because I own it.
The next set of book reviews. So
yeah, that's right.
It will be talked about sometime.
Likely in the not-too-far future.
In the not-too-far future. The world of tomorrow with flying cars and talking apes.
Next up, Chrissy.
Chrissy writes, dear Vortex Boys and Sean's old man voice.
Hey, Chrissy!
That traveling the Vortex in the nursing home improv was probably the funniest thing I have heard all week. You know, all you need is some sort of... All you need is some sort of original music, and you could do a skit of you three podcasting your 991st episode... All of the Ood cast. Oh, wait. Now you're playing the chicken dance. No, I have images of you three dancing around the studio flapping your wings. And we were. I wrote that first paragraph because I was listening to last week's podcast, so that's why it sounds like I'm typing in real time, because I was. Wibbly wobbly timey wimey and all that, you know. The Angels Take Manhattan had a lot of personal meaning for me, and it's kind of hard to describe in a feedback. It wasn't any easier in a blog post either. Because of that, it's hard for me to review it like I normally do. But I thought it was an excellent story about being inside a story. Took me a while to figure out what was going on, but the Doctor tells Amy that once he's
read ahead in the Melody Malone book that things she's read about must happen. I love that all the things we're seeing about Amy and Rory's relationship through these past few seasons come into play in their final story. I thought they got a fantastic send-off. It's almost like Amy's choice all over again. She could go on with the Doctor without Rory if she wanted to, but ultimately she decides to go after Rory. Of course, at this point, it isn't even a question of whether she would or would not. The emotion is that the Doctor will never see her again. I've already seen a few people comment that if the Doctor can't go back to 1938 New York and get the Pawns, why can't he go back a few years later, say in 1940 or something? This is just me thinking, but River has that line about the Doctor never wanting to see his friends age and fade away. Maybe he thinks that Amy and Rory have aged enough before their time, and he doesn't want to see them get any older. Maybe. It's kind of a weak argument, I know, but I wanted to put it out there and see what you guys thought of it.
It fixes it a little bit, but
that was a concern that Andrew had.
And there was a bit of dialogue when they're in Central Park about her needing glasses and the lines in her eyes, and that you could extrapolate from that conversation and the several drops that he doesn't like endings.
Yeah,
it's true. Like tearing the last page out of a book. That to me is so Doctor.
Anyway, that was a great story and a great way to say goodbye to two companions that I've grown to love, and I will miss them. The Pawns were the companions when I first was introduced into Doctor Who, so I've been with them the longest. I'm looking forward to meeting the new companion at Christmas, but Amy and Rory will always have a special place in my heart. Chrissy.
Thanks, Chrissy.
Next up, Brenda. She writes in, "Dear Vortex Gang, as a podcast resident old lady and card-carrying member of the AARP for the past 10 years, I officially endorse your hilarious old man banter from the last week's episode."
Because to be quite honest, I kept thinking last week after we were done, I thought, I hope we didn't offend a certain particular listener.
"I was going through an especially grisly traffic jam on Tuesday morning when I heard Sean launching the old man bit. I think I drew more than a few curious glances from fellow commuters as I laughed out loud for several minutes, but it certainly helped the rain-soaked day get off to a better start. As for the chicken dance gift cube, thanks, but that particular earworm has already been firmly planted by the Who episode itself. At least you three added claps," which was a nice variation.
Oh, you're welcome. And you know what?
I have some more!
Okay, that's enough of that.
Thank you. "About my mention of the tartan effect on the Doctor Who logo, perhaps it's my old eyes, but I thought I saw some added lines through the cubes as they were morphing. So it did, and still does, look like a tartan to me at one point. Of course, I'm a sucker for a Scott, so perhaps it was just wishful thinking on my part. I do have a couple of additional comments about the Power of Three. Sean asked about why the Earth scene with the exploding galaxies was used rather than the calmer Earth scene from previous scenes. Do you think it might have been because of Doctor Who didn't start filming in HD until the Planet of the Dead, so the earlier shots that RTD used weren't of the same quality? I haven't gone back to verify that there were similar Earth shots since they began to use HD, but if I'm wrong, I have no doubt some brilliant listener will correct me."
I just want to interrupt real quick and say, Brenda, when I read that, I thought that was, unfortunately, a very genius explanation for why that was very practical, and it made a lot of sense. It was like, oh, yeah, you're probably right.
It's practical, but in your defense, the mill could have easily made some sort of insert shot there that was calm and before
for as quick as the shot was, why bother?
Right, I mean, that's true.
You know, let's just go back to the well. And I mean, it's not like it's the big climax of a, you know, Star Trek Generations when they're blowing up the Klingon Bird of Prey, and they reused footage from the climax of Star Trek VI.
Right, right.
Anyways, Brenner goes on to say, as for Amy's timeline with the Doctor, I'm a bit confused. She was 7 when he first met her, 19 when he returned 12 years later, and 21 when he returned again and she started traveling in the TARDIS just before her wedding. We know from Rory's comment to his dad in Dinosaurs on a Spaceship that they were 31 at the time. Then there was likely some sort of gap between or before and after A Town Called Mercy in a full year during A Power of Three. So why does Amy qualify her 10 years with the Doctor comment by adding maybe not 10 years for Earth? It has been at least 10 years, if not more, that they have traveled together, even when they had the conversation at the beginning of the episode. When she's wearing reading glasses and the angels take Manhattan, and Presbyopia, love that word, I'm sure I pronounced that wrong, is...
Presbyopia.
Presbyopia?
Presbyopia. Presbyopia.
Presbyopia?
Yeah.
That word is something that usually doesn't happen before one reaches their early 40s. So really, how old are they? And on a tangent... Have we seen the introduction of the new costume element for the Doctor? Glasses? So that does bring up a valid point. Are Amy and Rory actually in their 40s?
I believe at the time of Angels, yes.
You think so?
I think so.
See, that's what... That goes back to my confusion last week about when we were...
Discussing it?
Yeah. We were discussing about the 10 years. Because I somehow got the impression they'd been traveling with the Doctor for 10 years.
So did I, but...
All right.
I got the impression that it hadn't been 10 years on Earth.
On Earth, okay.
She brings up the point.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So that's what I was thinking when she brought that up. I thought, well, then maybe that's the 10 years for Earth, 10 years traveling, but maybe it's been even longer.
So it's been 10 years traveling in adventures, 10 years on Earth, too. So no. 20 years?
I'm thinking it's been 10 years on Earth and even longer than that. She was making the reference to Earth time, but it's been 10 years on Earth, but it's been... even longer, and not necessarily pinpointing how long it had been with them. So I don't know.
Yeah. She does say maybe not 10 Earth years.
Right.
Or 10 years of Earth.
Wibbly wobbly time.
Yeah, I don't think we'll ever know.
Well, somebody's going to write a book called The Story of Amy's Travels with the Doctor. And it's going to be like the story of Martha. They're going to leave out the second half of the travels and just say, yeah, it was only 6 months worth of 10 years.
Brenda continues with, I spent the day with the Pond yesterday as BBC America ran a series of Pond-centric episodes. While watching Series 5 and 6 episodes, I was reminded of the revisited opening for this season's episodes, not just the new Vortex, but also the omission of the Amy voiceover bit that told her history with the Doctor. I understood why Moffat added this bit to bring new viewers up to speed, but I'm happy that we've been judged up to speed enough to eliminate it now. I didn't even notice its absence this season until I saw older episodes with it. Then it seemed a bit jarring. I also enjoyed the Doctor Who in the US documentary on the BBC America. It was nice to see a mix of classic and new Who in America, even though I got treated yet again to the Ballad of the Last Chance Saloon. It's a gift that just keeps on giving. We got to see a tribute to Trinity Wells, the American newscaster whose name I couldn't remember last week, and how sweet to see David Tennant in the interview sporting his wedding ring and his fanboy love for all things Who. I do love that man and his Doctor. I have mixed feelings and many questions about the Angels Take Manhattan. I had anticipated that they were going to get sent back in time since the Angels were involved, so there was no surprise there. But why was River so cavalier about it in the end? And will we ever know how Brian learned that they were lost in time, or how he reacted to the news? I would like to see some resolution with Brian, so since it didn't happen in this episode, do we have more time with him in the future episodes, or is he just lost to us as well? It appears we may have more time with River coming up. But why are she and the Doctor now apparently running in the same direction in time? When we last saw her, they were newlyweds, and now they appear to be an old married couple, which would indicate they are both going forward in time. The whole wibbly-wobbly of the Doctor and River has always confounded me, So maybe I'm missing something. I just attribute it to a big ball of wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey stuff. As for the regeneration energy, repairing her wrist, is it really that easy to summon that energy? When River did it for the Doctor in Let's Go Hitler, she was still in her early regeneration cycle. If it can be summoned at will, why hasn't he used it in the past for situations like this? And what about the comment that River made after Amy and Rory put the paradox into play and made it back in the cemetery? Amy and Rory are going to get terribly bored hanging around here all day. Did the paradox lock them in to that cemetery for all present time? Apparently, they lived out their past time in New York since they were buried there. Oh well, lots of questions, and I'm sure you'll cover them in all your discussions. I did enjoy seeing the TARDIS gang in New York City, a city I love and usually visit at least once a year. I go past the cemetery every time I travel. That cemetery every time I travel to and from LaGuardia Airport, and I've often visited those Central Park locations, including the Angel Fountain. I got a kick out of the Doctor checking his appearance in the Rolls-Royce Motors manufacturing ID plate on the TARDIS. Who knew he was driving a Rolls? I guess since the ship repaired herself in the UK after the crash in the Pond Garden, she went for the best available. I found the tribute to Arthur Darvill touching as they made Rory's middle name Arthur on the grave headstone. And when Amy's last act was to look at the Doctor and say goodbye, I did weep. Probably enhanced by the epic Murray Gold score at that point. But I have to say, as much as I adore Matt Smith's Doctor, his farewell scenes with the Pawns just didn't grab me. It pains me to say this, Keith, and I apologize, but that's how I felt. No need to apologize how you feel, Brenda. So, it's Godspeed to the Pawns, and now we head into a dry period without New Who. I offer you a challenge to fill this void. As I have mentioned, I have very little experience with Classic Who, and I'm a bit overwhelmed by the huge catalog of classic episodes. If you were to give a Classic Who newbie a top 20 list, what would it be?
Oh, no.
Or even a top 30 or 40.
No.
I realize that Keith's intro to Classic Who has followed an intentional path to meet up with the new Who viewing schedules and availability, and that it has also included audio episodes and such. For now, I would be content with televised episodes that are considered essential. I will eventually want to see everything, but for now, I have a busy life, so I need a manageable list. It doesn't have to be done this week, so take your time and contemplate, and I'll look forward to your input when I get it. Please forgive the rambling feedback this week. I got home late tonight, and I wanted to get it to you before you begin recording, unless you were actually recording late this week, as warned. In that case, enjoy the early feedback. I haven't taken time to edit, so excuse any idiocy. Have a great week, Brenda in Atlanta.
Thank you, Brenda, and we will, very soon we promise, give you a list of things to start with.
I'm going to go back to our previous comments on multi-doctor episodes, Case of Edrazani, apparently, Seeds of Death, and
Sean's going to shoehorn into our schedule a top 20 to start new people on.
So. Or Brenda, if you want, you can watch the classic episodes that are upcoming on the schedule and keep up with the podcast.
Yeah, there you go. That might be a way to go.
It's not a bad idea.
Well, I'll tell you what, Brenda. Start with a Visitation, because that's our next podcast.
We just sound like we know what we're doing when we say stuff like that.
Our next bit of feedback comes from Melanie.
He's not going to find it.
I got it.
Mine just disappeared. Hold on. Yours disappeared?
I think I accidentally archived it.
Oh, it's the one that actually is traveling the vortex.
Yeah, he keeps giving me all these people to read, and they're not people on my screen. They're just.
Yes, I have it now. I accidentally archived it.
Who is it, Melanie? Melanie writes, The Angels Take Manhattan, among other things. Hello, Vortex Gang. I want to say thank you for your awesome podcast filled with intelligent, insightful, and often humorous reviews and theories on the universe of Who, or Whoniverse. I'm a first-time writer, although I've been listening for a while, and I always look forward to your discussions of the latest Doctor Who episodes. They help with a very long and monotonous workday. Often my coworkers give me odd, or ood, looks when I randomly burst out laughing, or vocally agreeing, disagreeing with reviews and theories presented on the podcast. Such is the spice of life. I have to say that The Angels Take Manhattan, in my opinion, has been the best story of the five episodes presented to us this season. My sister had my most favorite response to the episode on Twitter. Oh, for the love of Moffat! I needed this giggle. I think that might just happen to be a... That is beyond awesome. I think that should
Can
be
we
like
make a shirt of that.
That should be
for the love of Moffat.
That should be a galley ribbon. That's fairly epic. Oh, for the love of Moffat! I needed this giggle after having sobbed for the last 20 minutes of the episode. Also, I have always suspected Lady Liberty was a weeping angel, but I'm pretty sure someone would have noticed if she walked away from her perch. It's also a little Ghostbusters 2 to me. This coincidence, reference, similarity is amusing to me. This is Moffat. I never know what to classify such happenings as correctly. I do have some questions, though. The biggest being, how is Rory, as well as the detective we meet in the beginning, whose name escapes me at the moment, able to cross his own timeline? I feel like the inability to cross one's own timeline rule only comes into play when it's convenient for the plot. Anyway, your thoughts would be much appreciated. You want to tackle that now?
Maybe we ought to wait, but I think crossing your own timeline infers directly involving yourself in that timeline. So if you go back, if you're sent back in time, you cross your own timeline and then live out your life never to be received again. I mean, that's not true because
I think it's slightly different.
Well, that's
your timeline ends.
Well, first of all, they do. If you cross your own timeline, you set up a paradox, which they ultimately do in this episode in order to resolve things. Secondly, when he goes back again at the very end of the episode, he's not technically crossing his timeline. His timeline just happens to proceed to another point in the past and continue on from there. So I don't consider this crossing your own timeline or maybe bending that rule in the sense that we clearly set up that paradox in this in the first place. So, and it's always been established that you don't cross your own timeline because it creates a paradox. And that's what happens in this episode. So it's excused.
And I almost got the impression that the angels are feeding off the paradox they created.
No, they're feeding off the time energy that happens, not the paradox. Don't confuse it.
Yeah, the paradox poisoned the well.
Right.
I
agree. But then they were still almost creating their own paradoxes by luring people and transporting them
out
from
never,
the same spot.
But they never transported them again once they sent them back
to
the battery, is what they're saying. Yeah. So they're not creating paradoxes because they realize that if once they've sent them back, they can only store them there for energy. They can't utilize that sending them back in time again, or it would create a paradox.
Okay.
Sorry, Sean.
Back to the Future, when Marty went back and got involved in his own life, that was crossing the time stream. Bad things happened.
Timeline. Crossing the time streams is...
Time stream is specifically Time Lord. Don't cross the streams.
Let's get a little Ghostbusters in there, too.
But... It's interesting. I agree with you that the entire thing is set up to the don't do this because you'll create the paradox. Unless, of course, it involves, hey, you're feeling down. Let's go to the carnival and buy yourself an ice cream cone because it's the right thing to do for this particular little snippet of backstory that we're creating.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that... The show has no hard and fast rule on.
There's,
you just kind of have to deal with it.
There's a lot of crossing your time stream in Big Bang as well to go back and to fix things that
are
necessary
absolutely.
For the plot. So.
Which, in this instance, I don't mind it because it's the end of their time stream.
Right. That was my thought, was because it's still linear, even though it's going back. And then, they're done traveling.
Unfortunately,
so.
Now you just know your future.
Right. Now, in the 50th anniversary year, when the pawns return, I'm going to keep saying that. We might have some issues we have to deal with there.
Yes. If they don't do a good enough job explaining it.
Right. There's more, Sean.
I wasn't reading. Was I?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it was.
Folks, he had a stroke.
Yeah.
It's been a long
weekend.
Not now.
It's been a while.
That's, well, no, I think I did. I just had another one just now. thoughts would be much appreciated. Also,
while I wasn't reading. Yes, you are. We only broke away for less than 5 minutes. Maybe you did have another stroke.
I'm tangenting. I think I've crossed my own timeline. I think I've created a paradox. Where are my legs? Also, while I'm sorry to lose Amy, I am far more sorry to lose Rory, as I have always felt that he was too good of a man for Amy and is my favorite character of this run with 11, although Oswin is a close second. Come on, Christmas. I still haven't forgiven Amy for attempting to seduce the doctor the night before her wedding. I wonder if Rory knows what went down. Forgive me, I have tangented. Is that a word?
We made it a word a long time ago.
Yes.
Look it up.
It'll say traveling the vortex.
Yeah. That's a picture of us.
Past tense.
I feel Amy slightly redeemed herself in this last episode. Just sorry that it took so long for that to happen. And what about Brian? Rory's father. We'll never see him again. Rory and Amy will never see him again. This saddens me. First Wilfred, and now Brian. Shakes head. Les sighs.
Okay, I want to interrupt real quick. Did you guys see the art? I can't remember who did it. Somebody did a drawing of it's the doctor and Brian. And it's the doctor saying, I'm sorry. And Brian's head's down, and there's a watering can in between them on the ground.
Aww, I don't want to see this.
It's sad, but it's like, yeah. That's what it would have been.
I'm going to pull a page out of...
That's all he would have to do is come up and say, I'm sorry.
But they're not dead.
No, but...
not going to return.
Yeah.
And you can continue to water the plants. Indefinitely. I'm going to pull a page out of that other perfect time travel trilogy, Back to the Future. And I like to believe that since they are now stuck in 1939 New York, all they did was write a letter. And they gave it to Western Union, and they telegraphed it to Brian and said, deliver it on such and such date, 2012. And so he's sitting there watering his plants, and all of a sudden there's a knock on the door, and the Western Union guy or whoever it is in England comes in and gives him this letter, and he opens it up.
And it has to be played by Joe Flaherty.
Oh, yeah.
Even though he was in 1955, now he's lived long enough to be a
two-person. All movie Western Union telegram delivery should be Joe Flaherty forever and all time and always. And so here's Brian, and he gets this little packet, and he opens it up, and it's this letter.
You don't even have to step out of Doctor Who for that.
Yeah.
Blink.
Yeah. Although if Amy and Rory start leaving him messages on his DVD collection, that would be a little weird.
Well, no, but her friend sends back a letter a la Back to the Future 3 through her grandson.
Right.
Yeah.
Which was also used as a plot device in Quantum Leap. I don't remember who did it first now.
I don't. I'm pretty sure it wasn't Doctor Who.
Anyway, they say. So, moving on. I have to say that I love dinosaurs on a spaceship. I love dinosaurs. I love historical references. I love Brian Williams. David Mitchell and Robert Webb. Everybody, stop what you're doing and watch the Mitchell and Webb look or peep show. These two are brilliant.
Whoa. Was Mitchell and Webb, was that the voices of the robots?
Those were the voices of the robots.
Oh, I didn't. Even if you said they were comedians. You said that like 2 weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago, whenever we reviewed it, that it was a comedy duo, but I had never put two and two together. Yeah, I've watched Mitchell and Webb look on, it's on Netflix.
I think Peep Show is too.
I think you're right, yeah.
I think I looked it up, and I
did not realize it was those guys. Oh, wow. All right.
Cool. All right, I'll have to go back and...
Even cooler.
Now
Dinosaurs on a Spaceship is my favorite of the season. I'm sorry, guys.
You lie. Those two are brilliant. And Filch, the actor's name is irrelevant to me, as he will always be Filch from Harry Potter. Or the incoherent farmer with the barn full of guns from Hot Fuzz.
Yeah, that's right, he was in that too.
I guess for me, Filch is... the incoherent farmer from Hot Fuzz, because I saw that before any of the Harry Potter.
You saw they started shooting the third of the Coronado trilogy.
Yes.
I love Lestrade. or Rydell, or Riddle, or whatever he's Lestrade from Sherlock. I love the oddly polite robots.
True.
I love the Silurian arc was brilliant, and frankly, Filch had it coming. The man committed genocide. He would have done so again without hesitation. His death may not have been in the most Whovian of fashions. See the family of blood, where justice is served perfectly. But the hour was ending, and the missiles were convenient. I also think Filch's death needed to be that brutal, because we needed to build up stuff for a town called Mercy. Side note, I think A Town Called Mercy and Dinosaurs on Spaceship both occurred over this time period of The Power of Three. But that may just be me.
Well, no, that's funny now, because...
Well, I don't think it. I don't think Dinosaurs on Spaceship...
But Power of Three, or I'm sorry,
Town Called Mercy.
Town Called Mercy did.
Yes. Dinosaurs.
There might be evidence that points towards dinosaurs as well.
You think so?
Yeah.
We'll have to go back
they
and watch them
They left during the party
again.
And came back during the party. That's
It's a time machine, Keith. You can
Brian
leave.
Didn't go with them.
Brian knew about
oh,
it.
That's when right. Because there was when the, picked, the... He was changing when he, the light.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, he was changing the light.
Yeah, so dinosaurs, I don't think so.
No, I got you.
I got you. May just be me. No, it's not just you, because we've had other people that feel that way. Okay, feel like I've rambled enough. You guys are awesome. Keep on rocking the free world. Oodly, yours, Melanie in Virginia, or Melanie Marie, at Pirate Queen Lola on Twitter. I'm assuming that you are okay with us giving that up. Everybody go follow Melanie now.
Trust me. You give me a Twitter handle, it's fair game.
That's kind of what I assumed. P.S. If anybody wants to explain the Pandorica business to me, that would be most wonderful, because I'm still very lost on the subject. Perhaps after the Sonic Screwdriver dissection episode.
I'm not sure I understand her confusion. What Pandorica business? The cracks? Or...
We still don't know. There's a box. Some bad stuff went down.
I understood the purpose of the Pandorica.
And some bad stuff went down.
That's the official BBC review on the back of the episode guide. There's a box.
Some bleep happened.
And it doesn't have the chicken dance in it. Oh, God, could you imagine being trapped in that thing for 2,000 years with the chicken dance playing? What if the Pandorica
I got
is
the
a really big cube?
I got the impression they weren't conscious.
Would you be after 2,000 years of the chicken dance?
10 minutes of the chicken dance, no. I'd knock myself unconscious.
Be trying to bang your head against the seat rest and not succeeding because you're strapped down, Clockwork Orange style.
Well, now I am officially following Pirate Queen Lola.
Pirate Queen Lola! Our last bit of feedback comes from Phil. Odd Duck Phil, to be precise. He says, comment, question, hey, who Pekins? Just finished Angel Stick Manhattan. It was good. Really, really good. But to quote Forrest Gump... That's all I've got to say about that.
Wow, it was a good Forrest Gump.
Thank you. You broke my heart and made me cry, Moffitt. And I even knew it was coming. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to shoot a bunch of baddies in Borderlands 2 to chase my blues away. Sad Duck Phil.
All right, let's move on to our review of The Power of Three.
What?
I don't want to do this one.
Let's talk about something else.
Let's talk about something happy.
How about we go back to A Town Called Mercy? Can we beat that one up anymore?
Today's podcast
How about
has been
we properly review A Town Called Mercy.
Today's podcast has been preempted so that we can bring you this video of a chimp running into a glass wall. We're pulling out all the stops to not break down on the air.
Oh,
how did okay. You see the chimp ran into the glass wall again? In order to not talk about the depressing stuff, I'm going to talk about the episode, but talk about my biggest issue with it.
Okay, what's your biggest issue?
Yeah, let's talk about how much we hate it first, because that'll make me feel much better.
Because we'll spend about an hour and a half on that, and then, well, we liked it, though.
We liked it, and we cried.
Let's talk about all those things that are wrong with 1939 Manhattan. Every time the Brits do Manhattan, they do it wrong. Where was that accent from? I don't know.
Oh! The guy who, Grail, or whatever his name was, that hired?
The detective, the first detective.
No, the guy who hired
the detective.
And the guy who, yeah. He's from Kansas. Did you guys know that?
I didn't.
By the way, yeah, he is American. In fact, he is on...
he was on Brotherly Love.
He was on a Disney Channel show. He was on Brotherly
Love.
But he was on a Disney Channel show as
well. What's his name?
He was the mechanic on Brotherly Love
with
Joey Lawrence and...
the Lawrence brothers.
The little Lawrence brothers.
It's all three of them.
Oh, yeah, it was all three of them.
You guys are really bringing me down. He was a lot heavier than that.
He was a lot heavier, yeah.
And he's gray now.
He's lost more hair.
Yeah. He was also on a Disney Channel show, I think, for a little while. That was on ABC, so that's why, you know, it was technically Disney.
I thought they did. I remember it on Disney Channel.
It might have aired on Disney Channel for a while, but it was on ABC.
Mike McShane?
Yes.
Way faster than you are over there, Mr. Typing.
I had to reboot my computer. I shut the lid.
All right, Mike McShane's from Kansas.
Yes. He was the doomed hypnotherapist in Office Space. I knew I recognized him from somewhere.
That's right. All right, anyway, so...
and he was Friar Truck and Prince of Thieves.
We're going to come up with like 100 other things.
No, I totally thought, as soon as I looked at him, I went, I think that's Friar Tuck, because that's what I recognized him from. But I wasn't totally sure because he didn't sound the same. But yeah, that was totally him. Okay, good to know. All right, so what's your complaint?
What is your complaint, Keith?
The Statue of Liberty.
Yeah.
It's a meme. Not for the reasons everyone else brought up. I don't like that it's a meme brought to life.
Yeah, that's
never enter Doctor Who.
That's the thing is, yeah, it was
it's brought done
up
as
several,
a gimmick.
It was several years ago that somebody put the meme on, and it's the shot of Martha and the Doctor on Liberty Island, and somebody puts on there that I don't remember exactly how the meme goes, but something
it's
that's
like what if the Statue of Liberty is a weeping angel?
Yeah, exactly. No one's ever taken their eyes off of. Suddenly it makes its way into Doctor Who. I thought it was a little trite. I mean, it was just. It didn't need it. Even though Rory Namier on the roof, and they kind of use it in the sense that it's the one thing that they couldn't escape from because it's huge. But it really, somebody said it earlier in feedback, it felt very Ghostbusters to me. Especially the walking, you heard it thumb, thumb,
yeah.
Thumb. And being such an American icon and all the whatnot, it really felt shoehorned in there because it wasn't, somebody else said that it just felt rushed and put in there for a gimmick because there wasn't much to it. I mean, it was there twice, which goes back to somebody else who put in the fact that whole opening sequence really kind of spoils everything. It was all of that about the Statue of Liberty that I didn't like. I didn't think it needed to be there.
It
should have been a regular-sized angel, and I absolutely agree that the cherubs were the scariest part of
those.
Stephen Moffat was able to take this one step further. And that was scary enough. You didn't have to have the big, you know, how many 180 foot.
Because it wasn't scary either.
Yeah, I mean, it's
doing fan service in the wrong way. I think there's fan service where it's done well, and it's saying the fans have talked about this. Let's make it a reality.
Right.
But
right.
It's not. This is not a realistic reality to exist.
Right.
That is the problem. I disagree that it was bad. I really liked the Statue of Liberty. I thought it was cool because it's just they're taking over. It's not that she's always been an angel. It's that the angels are slowly infecting Manhattan and they've taken over. It's like, okay, I'll buy that.
I'd like it better if it wasn't a meme first.
Well, that didn't even bother me because it's almost like, ha ha, the joke's on us. You know, because now the doors are open. Well, what else have we put up there? James Bond's a Time Lord. Well, we do have a new movie coming out. 50th anniversary for Bond. 50th anniversary for who? Okay, why not? Maybe something will come of it.
Right.
But, you know, it goes back to the my brain. Through the whole episode, my brain kept fighting with the fanboy in this one. And they were having this knockdown, drag-out fight, and it was almost distracting. Because there were things, the fanboy in me really liked the Statue of Liberty. I just thought that was cool. It was a lot of fun. Yeah, it was goofy, but I didn't care. It was just fun.
And then, I think that was all that fanboy, even though it was a meme that
it was so big and over the top and incredulous.
But it wasn't paying service to the Who fan in me.
No,
it was
I'm just
paying
saying,
service to the just the pop culture idea of
Keep in mind, too, that if you're coming at this
It's almost like, oh, we're sending this in Manhattan. We're sending it in the United States. What's a big American icon? Well, the Statue of Liberty. We make it an angel. I mean, it's just,
keep in mind, too, that
if there were more done with it, I might
there may be a grain of salt that needs to be taken with this from the standpoint that we're from Kansas. So, obviously, anytime somebody makes a Wizard of Oz reference, we groan. We don't want to hear it. We don't want to talk about Dorothy's house. We don't want to talk about, oh, you're over the rainbow. We don't want to talk about Toto. Don't ask, because we're tired of it. But for somebody who's not from Kansas, they don't get that. That's what we're known for. So the show's written in England, and what are we going to do? We're in the United States. We're going to Manhattan. Oh, let's the Statue of Liberty. What if she was an angel? And it was probably a huge thing over there to
that's
be like,
I think it was trite.
Oh, wow, really cool. But for us being here in the States, it was trite. But like I said,
but they've done those landmarks respectfully and well, like the Empire State Building and the Dalek two-parter.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was done well, and that's a landmark.
Or the Empire State Building and the Dalek one-parter. The Chase.
Oh, well, I haven't seen that one yet.
Yeah, sorry.
It took me a minute to get where you wanted to. Ooh. I'm going to come up with a new meme. I'm going to post it tomorrow. Abraham Lincoln is a weeping angel. In his big old chair in Washington.
The
Lincoln Memorial.
He's already a Jedi.
He's a vampire killer. How do you think he kills the vampires? He sends them back in time. Anyway, the fan in me was going, wow, that's cool. That's a lot of fun. And I'm giddy with excitement. Not for any fanboy reason, but just because I'm up on the episode. But then the science fan in me kept coming out going, there's no way she walked all the way across town.
Oh,
period.
We don't know where the Winter Key is.
No, we do. Winter Key is near Battery Park. We know that.
Oh, yes, they
Battery
say that.
Park
yes.
is where the Statue of Liberty ferry leaves for Liberty Island. It's on the very bottom of Manhattan Island.
It's not a far walk.
Yeah. It is not a far
walk
at all.
It's a far walk across.
Well, she would walk across the harbor.
Yeah,
but no, absolutely. But
when nobody was looking.
She got down off of her pedestal and walked in the water.
That's the problem. That was the problem. The science part of me kept going, you're not playing by your own rules. You have set this stuff up.
Did you notice,
specifically with Liberty, they turn their back on her all the time. That there's the big mouth in the foreground, and they're having a conversation here, blah, 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 blah. And she's just looming there doing nothing.
Yeah.
That's the problem, that was bothersome
about it, is if they would cleverly have done more with it than make it feel like it was just put in there for a joke or for a sight gag, then I would have been better with it. Yeah. But it just feels like it was inserted there for a sight gag.
I 100% agree with Alex, the detective, unfortunately, ruined the story.
It gives away a lot of the plot.
Here's the big problem with that.
The statue didn't come back at the end, then it was only the beginning.
Well,
it would have been a sight gag and called it
actually,
good.
I think it works the reverse. Yeah, I would have preferred it the other way.
I think she's the climax of that film, and she doesn't show the beginning, and she's more effective.
I think she took away from that scene.
Was it Alex? I totally go to what Alex said. The opening sequence of this should have been them in the park reading the book, Roy going for coffee. Roy ended up in 1930s.
Yeah, I agree.
Scene. There you go. That totally should have been the way it opened.
Here's the problem. I loved the detective. When all the discussion we talked about the Angels Take Manhattan, and oh, it's probably going to be a this or that. Nowhere did I think film noir. And we get a detective doing a film noir, and I got excited. It was like, oh, yeah, this is going to be cool. It's going to be awesome. And he had a great story, and he was hired by this guy, and we've got this mystery to solve. And I got real invested right away in the first 5 minutes. I was there. And then he's dropped. He sees himself as an old man, and he's dead. We get the Statue of Liberty, and that's it. That's the gag. The whole opening bit with this detective is over and done with.
Yeah.
And all it wound up doing was a big telegraph act for what's going to happen later.
Right. Yeah.
Now, sometimes you can do that. Sometimes, if you're clever, you can do a telegraph act and say, this is what we're going
to
do for you.
Unfortunately, it needs to be more subtle than what this was.
But this one, for whatever reason, just didn't work for me. And I, in some ways, as much as, and I'll go on record now, I loved the episode. Don't get me wrong.
Oh,
This is not a Tom Cullen. I really, really liked it. But yes, there were huge things that I just had big problems with that didn't work for me.
Anything else? Because we need to get into the things we loved about this episode.
That was my only issue with it until I read the comments of, well, why don't they just leave?
Yeah, now the whole thing is falling apart.
Here's the thing. I can even overlook that now, because when I sit down and I watch the episode, I didn't really think of that.
No, it's not.
Somebody brought
that
up after, and I do have issue with it now. But those were the two or three things that really deterred from the episode as I watched it. Beyond that, I absolutely had a blast watching this episode, and I loved it, and it pulled at all the right heartstrings, and it was just sad enough. It was a fit. No, it was good.
It was good.
No. It was a blast up until when it starts getting weighty, because even the seriousness of it, even the creepiness of it, but until that roof scene, really. It was fun. Maybe fun's the wrong word, but it was an enjoyable. I'm going to go back to fun, because there were a lot of fun things going on.
There were a lot of fun things.
The doctor was a lot of fun in this, even though it got weighty for him with when River's hand gets caught, and he said, "Just
that's the other thing."
The
I had
joy
a huge problem
of
with.
Her getting out, and wow, you actually got away. You know, you were able to get out, and then. Finding out that her wrist was broken, that was just like a huge weighty moment. But I mean, all of that build up to that was like, wow, we're going through this thing. The what's his name? What was the guy that had hired the investigators?
Like Grail or something?
Grail.
Sam.
When the doctor shows up and finally punches through because of the whole. That was another thing I absolutely loved. Going back to the Ming Dynasty, when they're making these vases and putting the Yaos on there, and just that was so cool. I love the whole interplay in there, and then him showing up and him, you know, passing out from shock. I loved that. I mean, that was all fun. That was fun stuff. It was enjoyable stuff that was going on.
I think it was fun.
It was light
fun until they arrived at the Winter Keep.
It was light before we were going to get heavy, and that's when it happens. Yeah.
I would say it got heavier before the roof.
No, you're right. It was when they entered the room.
Yeah.
That was the other problem that I had, and again, Alex brought it up, was so now the doctor can just miraculously summon regeneration energy whenever he needs to heal somebody that's important to him, but not somebody else that's important to him that she's never done before. I can buy it when River's doing it to him because she's fresh off of regeneration. I can buy it when David Tennant does it to grow a new hand. I can buy it because we're within that time frame. It has now been established, thanks to the extra time traveling that he's been doing with Amy, he is not fresh in this 11th regeneration anymore. He has been around for, what did we figure, 200-300 years at this point as Matt Smith. Where did this ability come from?
No, as the 11th Doctor.
As the 11th Doctor. Yeah. Where did this ability come from? If they had given me a line that said, "You're wasting the extra regenerations I gave you." Okay, fixed.
Okay. that would have worked
that
better.
That would have worked.
Now,
it would have worked better.
Part of the reason I didn't have a problem with this is at first I couldn't figure out, he's doing this, and I couldn't figure out why River was getting so upset with him. She was just lambasting him for doing this and giving up this residual energy. However, looking back on that, it was such an important thing for her to get so upset that perhaps he always has had this ability to do so, but by doing so, now he does not have enough for his next regeneration, and that's why you don't do it. You have the ability to do it, but if you do it, you're not going to be able to regenerate into your next body because you have to have every last bit of regenerative
or removes ability. A regeneration from your list.
That could be as well. But to me, the weightiness of the fact that she was getting after him so much and she understood how much of a sacrifice this was for him, due to her reaction, it was clear to me that it was something that he should never have done, in her opinion. And that it's something that might have consequences later down the line.
Once again, we're going to be stuck with this. I hope they fix it later.
Well, that's probably true.
I don't mean that to be that it's a detrimental part for the episode in and of itself. I hope that Moffat, I hope that it wasn't just I forgot, now I have to retcon it. I hope that it was a planned, I'm going to drop this here, and then later when the fall of the 11th happens, we're going to go back and go, remember when you did that? Now you can't do this.
It would have felt like a drop had River not got so upset and not really explained why she was so adamantly upset. That's what makes me secure in the idea that Moffat has plans for it later.
I don't have issues with it because of two reasons. One is...
It makes Matt Smith more wonderful in your eyes. No.
And then he rubbed her hand, and the golden energy came out, and he healed her.
As for the point of why he hasn't done this to other people, that tells me that obviously River means this much to him.
Well, which lends to my theory that there's... Yes. Yeah, I mean, that's and why he would have done it.
How he's able to do it, Romana. I point to Romana as evidence as the ability to tap into regeneration energy.
You know me and the Romana issue, so I'm not going to go there.
I know fans don't like it, but it's set a precedent.
So you're going to use Douglas Adams as a...
There's also
it's official canon.
No, but there's also a gender theory out there that women probably, or that female Time Lords have the ability.
Well, I think that's sexist.
Throw up their regeneration,
which would have been okay until Neil Gaiman came along and said, "But now you can flip back and forth between regenerations." So now my brain is melted.
Or River can use the rest of hers for to reviving. Say, revive doctors.
They're fast and loose with their generation energy.
I will be the first to admit I bawled off and on through this episode, and I'm so glad I was by myself because I was a mess. I had to wait until I didn't have to, but I waited until Sunday morning to watch this because I now that I don't have cable, I no longer have BBC America, so I have purchased the what I call it, the Fast Pass, the season pass from iTunes so that I get them the day after they air. And so I had to wait till Sunday morning. But fortunately, everybody was still in bed, and I was up watching this thing in the morning. And I had got up specifically early enough to watch this. And I was crying. It was so heartbreaking. And I think it's a wonderful send-off for the Prawns. I see the concerns with Rory, and I think we all agree that Rory has become a favorite companion of ours.
Yes.
I think we all feel that Rory is as important as Amy in a way. However, I'm going to side on the fact that I think this ended in the way that it did because it does harken back to Amy's choice, and it does show us that it's more of a there's no choice now. It's a set in stone as to where she goes. It was necessary for there to be that sacrifice of a character in order to make the decision that Amy makes even more weighty for the episode. I also think that even as much as I love Rory, as much as I think he's the best companion, or one of the best companions ever, he also joined the Time Team late, and it made sense to me for him to leave early. And it made sense for me to leave not by choice, by in perfect way that we've had Rory going.
Because he didn't really join by choice either.
Well, exactly. And so, the last 3 years have been the relationship, or the last 2.5 years have been the relationship between Amy and the Doctor is really what we've built up to. That was the point of the whole conversation outside the Tower of London in The Power of Three. That's a reason for the finale there for this episode this week. For the conversation that they have in the graveyard and the flashback to Amelia Pond, to little Amelia Pond in the garden, go to her and tell her this story and all of this stuff, it really brought Amy's character full circle. Necessary without having Rory there, to be honest with you. And I think that it was appropriate the way that Rory was dispatched, even though we all grew to love Rory, maybe even more so than maybe Moffat had intended. I think it was a character that Moffat never intended for fans to grow as attached to as they did. I think he's grateful that they did. In fact, I mean, this was the first year that Arthur Darvill went to all of the press stuff because I think had people not latched onto Rory like they did and he becomes such a favorite, I don't think he would have been the third person to come to, Comic-Con this year and do all of the publicity things that he's done. So,
well, and it's nice for him to finally get his dues. Only that way, but recognizing his name in the pre-credit sequence.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
You know.
And I think that all came along based on the fact that he was written really well, and I think that Arthur Darvill did such a fantastic job in the role.
Yeah.
But for the purpose of the story, the way that it played out, I was perfectly fine with, because it really was the way that I think Stephen Moffat had maybe outlined in his mind from the beginning.
And I think the fact that Amy is willing to give up the Doctor and go be with Rory in this foreign time period is a huge tribute to Rory as a character. She's willing to give everything up to be with him. Oh, yeah. What else can you say about it?
That to me felt almost flat in the face of when she climbed up on that ledge with him.
Well,
that she's willing
after she's willing to kill herself, but thinking she's going to live anyways.
Well, but they still didn't know. They were still taking it on that grain of faith.
She believed that Rory believed.
Right.
I got the impression that Amy, with her whole heart, believed that Rory was right. Rory's the one that was taking it with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, he reflects that in the fact that he's like, no way, you can't do this. Because that's his explanation for standing on the ledge and getting ready to do it, is because it's going to work. He still is reluctant to let Amy do it with him.
He doesn't want to take that chance because he
jokes about it. But you'll die. So what else is new? Who else but me could do this?
Has that stopped me?
Yeah, I'll come back. And so he's fine with it when the danger's to himself. But when she steps up on that ledge with him, she is taking it on his faith, but he's taking it on this ought to work, based on what limited knowledge I've been able to glean off of all of these crazy things that we've done. This makes logical sense to me. Now, keep in mind that Rory is the keeper of the, what color are they?
Right.
You know, and that the anachronistic electricity is only a few years out. You know, so he's looking at this from that perspective. That, well, this ought to work this way, even though it obviously doesn't. In this time, he's rewarded. So I think when she then turns around and he's gone, it's a no brainer now. I mean, it's a tribute to him, but it's there was no doubt in my mind, and the Doctor's trying to pull her away, and he's pleading with her.
But of course, you also have to remember, you know, that this is their last story.
Well, that was the other thing that I felt almost a little, I don't want to say cheated by, but it kind of added in some ways to my emotional response going into it, knowing that this was going to be it. Because as soon as we get that moment on the rock, and they're in New York, and they're laughing, and they're carrying on, and they're happy, and I looked at that and went, this is the last time we will see this. From here on out, it's going to be a Moffat scare ride. And he's going to do horrible things to these characters that we love. Because that's what his MO is. For the love of Moffat. But, you know, so I looked at that and that kind of helped build up that moment for me. But then it also started to slowly start taking away some of the suspense and agonizing of what was to follow, because every time one of them would get into trouble and they would get attacked by an angel, it was like, and that was it. Oh, no, they're still here. Sorry. I think I had steeled myself up for this. They're going away. I'm going to lose them. They're gone.
Yeah.
And then it didn't happen. And then we got to the end and it was like, well, of course she's going to go with him. I mean, that's how you have to resolve that.
I think you're right. But I think
am I making sense?
But I think that moment also, somebody had brought up in feedback about how they will never forgive Amy for seducing the Doctor that night after they returned to her apartment, or to her home, to her room. But I think this is what makes me forgive that moment, is that it was a no-brainer at that point, that we had gone through this, the whole scene on the ledge, and this, and that was the forgiving moment, that it was no longer her choosing between Rory and the Doctor, as she did in Amy's Choice. It was no longer even a choice for her. It was always going to be Rory from that point on. Yeah. And so realizing that, that completely makes me forgive what she did early on when she was just fresh to this and wasn't even certain that, I mean, it was just, there was She was immature at the time, and she has matured through the course of this series. And
it's honestly, I forgave her after Amy's Choice because she chose it, Rory.
I think because there was still that, because there was the idea of having to choose.
Yes,
even though she chooses what.
Yeah, Rory, I get what you're saying.
There was still that whole. This really just kind of solidified it for me.
I just didn't hold on to that drama.
Yeah. For me, it was very much a. Okay, this is a horrible thing for you to have done, and then she makes the choice for Rory, but there's still that underlying tension, and we have talked about it multiple times, even in Impossible Astronaut, where Rory and the Doctor sit down and talk,
right.
Where we're not quite sure where she's at with this, and it played out through this whole thing, and then we get to The Girl Who Waited, and which is just... fantastic.
She has that gut-wrenching reaction.
She has that. But even that, I think, fandom in general was... And we've talked about it, how much Rory has kind of catapulted over her mm-hmm. to become this favorite companion. But I go back to the moment in Daleks where when she says, I can't have children, then all of a sudden... That cleared everything up for me, that this is her dedication, and it fixed everything. Yeah. And it really did. It really brought Amy back up to that same level, and she's been phenomenal this whole season.
Yeah, I don't
have that qualm anymore.
See, I've never had that issue since they got married. I've always seen her dedication to Rory regardless. Yeah. Since that point, I've seen her relationship with the Doctor as best friends.
Right. Well, it just felt like there was still some... Maybe it wasn't even there. It was just the writers were trying to leave some residual...
That I think they were trying to still... Yeah, to maybe... There was this underlying tension just to keep the drama there. But quite frankly, the conversation outside the Tower of London was one of those moments of, wow, you know... They're just really best friends now.
They're
best friends now. That's all it is. And at that point, I was like, yeah, you know what? This is it totally worked. This whole season really, really developed all of their relationships. It really finalized where all of their relationships needed to be or went at this point. And I think this season worked on a character level
very much.
Very well.
And all
the way back to the Bond Life shorts.
Oh, absolutely.
And I agree with you that I as much as it pains me that Rory didn't get a bigger going out, that he just and is gone, and that's the last time we'll ever see him. He doesn't get a heroic death. He doesn't get to be the Pandorica guy. He doesn't get any of those moments. He just... and confused.
But it's kind of fitting for him.
But it is. Well, but I love the fact that we got to bookend it back with young Amelia and really bring that story full circle. And that was so fitting.
And he gets a reference in that epilogue.
He does. Well, and Rory gets his due prior to that because it's his rationale, his reasoning as to why this... I mean, he really gets his moment in the fact of realizing that, hey, if I create this paradox, all this will go away.
Yeah.
Poison the well. So he still gets a heroic moment, even though it's taken from us.
It's very Joss Whedon thing to do to set that character up and give him this emotional high and give everybody the yes. And then yank the rug out from underneath
you. And then the ship comes crashing through the...
I'm a leaf on the wind.
So,
Glenn, you aren't the only one who cried. I mentioned earlier that I cried. Sarah cried. Sarah started about the roof scene. It was shortly after that when I started.
Yeah, that's about where I started as well.
Sean?
I did not cry.
Really?
I don't know if it was the...
I'm going to make you cry.
I was prepared to cry. I went into this, and I looked at Mel, and I looked, because it was like, ugh. And I thought about going and getting the Kleenex and setting them out and being ready, and being prepared just in case, because I was prepared to do it. But I think it was the combination of the long weekend and the drive and the frustrations with not being able to get it to play.
You cried enough all weekend.
Yeah. It was.
No, I just weeped over those
there
DVDs.
There was nothing left in the tear ducts.
And the pressure of the fact that I still have to get this thing watched. I mean, I literally watched it an hour before, showtime for us. So... I think maybe there was that added pressure of at this point it was a homework assignment. It was yet another long line of homework assignments that I had to get through, and so I think maybe that kind of took away from my physical attachment to it. It's also the only one of this season that I've only seen the once, whereas I've watched all the rest of it twice.
I don't think I can bring myself to watch it again yet. I watched a bonus feature that they released on YouTube, Last Days of the Pawns or something along those lines. I don't know if it's BBC or BBC America, but it's on YouTube. It's like 12 minutes long. That brought tears to my eyes. Mm.
This is your first companion leaving.
These are my companions.
Yeah, he started with these companions.
I started with Amy and Rory.
You know, I think we may have to discuss a possible upgrade in status now. I know we'd set it for when your doctor regenerates.
So he went from newbie to novice.
Newbie to novice.
Something else above that, wasn't
and
there?
Then,
what?
Because I cried at somebody else's regeneration.
Oh, yeah. I think we give you half bump
for
that.
We gave him a bump up for that.
Half bump.
I should have thought this out before I said it. But, what did we go through? You went from...
Well, we'll come up with something next week.
We'll figure it out. But I think the loss of your first companion is probably a...
and not only one, two.
Yeah.
I lost two companions.
Double whammy.
This counts as a companion.
Do you count Ian and Barbara as one companion?
Yeah.
Okay.
They were there equally as long.
Although one is Amy's was longer, but
no. Rory's been there since the beginning.
Been there since the beginning.
He didn't travel with her. Yeah. But I'm saying lengthwise, he's been there since the beginning.
But is that lengthwise 10 Earth years? Or?
We're not going there.
It was a really, really, really good episode. There were so many fantastic, you know, the cherubs. I've always thought cherubs are scary. I have never thought they were cute. They were never cuddly. They were never, aw. They're always, ugh. And once again, Moffat tapped into that psyche that, you know, I'm waiting for the clown episode. he's got one in him somewhere. Something fundamental scary.
Yeah, I don't know. I hope they don't go. They've done enough clowns in Sarah Jane, and we had the one clown in
psychedelic circus.
God Complex.
Well,
there's one sitting on the bed in God Complex.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
There's a great meme that I saw online. There's a great meme that somebody put together from the God Complex that it's Matt Smith opening the door to that room, and he goes, "Oh, it's you." And then the next picture is John Barrowman going. Which I liked, but yeah, there were so many. The collector I thought was wonderful, but I really wanted to know more about his deal. And was it angels in particular that he was collecting? I didn't notice. I noticed like a painting of an angel, not necessarily a weeping angel, but just in the house. So maybe that was his thing, but. He felt a little like a watered-down Van Staten.
This is me presuming a lot, but I got the impression he was a collector of statues, of priceless statues.
Oh, that could be. I didn't think of that.
And suddenly, they're starting to... The angels are coming to take over those statues, and that's what he's trying to lock out. So that was the impression that I got. The ones in the house weren't necessarily converted angels yet.
Yeah.
But that was the reason he was being sought out, is because he was had so many of them.
See, and this is the other amazing thing.
I got the impression it was because he captured one.
Well, that was ultimately what happened. Yeah, you're right, because he was a collector and he ended up capturing.
See, this is the other thing that you could really
get
more. And
then that fascinated his
more from this, because if you don't pay real close attention to this, it's like, okay, so he hires this private investigator to go find these moving statues. And then he's got one locked up, so that means the private investigator succeeded, right? He went and found one and captured it and brought it back to the guy. Okay.
Except he got transported back
in time.
That's
not what happened. So there's a whole, I don't know, there's a whole lot of stuff that just is kind of like, that doesn't really make a lot of sense when you think about it. But... as we've said before, a lot of times Doctor Who is not meant to be obsessed
right.
over and thought
and
about.
You
it's meant to just be enjoyed.
A lot of it.
Yeah.
Which we tend to do anyway, but...
And there's been a lot of comments on, especially Facebook, that seems this season is a season of feels. It's all about the feelings and emotions. And I don't... Yeah, there may be plot issues, but I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts?
I think Moffat has followed through this season, making everything feel very epic, very climactic, very cinematic.
And each episode felt different.
Yeah. And did you notice the overlay on the... something else? Was a complete different color this time.
Well, last week it was... At the end, it was different, too.
Yeah. This one never went to the... You know, I've always read... I don't know how accurate this is. That the blue vortex or... Yeah, the blue or purplish vortex, the darker vortex, is... space, traveling through space, and the red has always been equated to traveling through time.
Oh.
Both were space this time. They were both the same color. You notice it never goes to that red when the Doctor Who font comes up, and it kind of does that. It almost feels like you're falling off of a cliff as it goes. Right. It didn't turn red this week at all. It never turned red. And that was the first time I'd noticed that we didn't get a color shift. It was a color shift, but it was between two colors. It wasn't that red color.
I would have thought more than anything, an episode with Weeping Angels, you wouldn't have got the space travel. It would have all been time.
Yeah. Well,
but I think we'd also established, or thought that we'd established at one point in time in the past, that red and blue weren't space and time, but were forward and backward.
Well, and then I think, I remember us talking about that as well. But I wonder if maybe that wasn't a indicate that if it is space and time, an indicator of we're ending up at a time that's kind of locked off, because it's even before the Doctor arrives the first time, it's already has trouble because there are time anomaly, enough time, what do you call time interference, I think is what it was said.
Distortion. Yeah.
In order to get through there. So maybe it was only traveling in space at that time because maybe the idea there is, hey, in this episode, you can't get there from here type thing. So yeah, I don't know.
What did you guys think of the overlay, the font overlay?
I couldn't tell what it was this time.
It's the head of the statue.
It was the green. I hadn't thought of that.
And you could even see the base of the spikes.
Could you? Okay. I remember it now in retrospect, but when I watched it, I couldn't figure out exactly what it was going to be. So, okay. Makes sense.
Of all the overlays, that one was my favorite.
Really?
Yeah. I liked that one the best because it was like, that was really cool. But again, it would have been, what the hell am I looking at? And then she shows up at the end, it would have been like, made the connection.
I wouldn't have remembered until I rewatched it. Then I would have made the connection.
Right, if she hadn't showed up till later.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I don't think there's anything else. We're all sad that the pawns are gone, but we get to move on to bigger and better things as Osmond returns. So,
what do you guys think of the?
I think it's going to take a couple episodes.
The teaser,
the three second teaser.
And
why don't we get one shot of the Doctor?
One shot of some important dude.
One shot of Osmond at the bookend between there is the one shot of the dude who looked a lot like William Hartnell. Did anybody else think he looked a lot like William Hartnell?
I just noticed the top hat.
Looked a lot like William Hartnell.
Yeah, I don't know.
Huh. All right. What do we got coming up on the schedule?
You're trying to plant that whole Susan vibe. Right? I see what you did there. Next week on the schedule for Friday Night Who on October 5th, which is, yes, technically the 6th, since we start at midnight, Peter Davidson in The Visitation.
It's kind of a lame story. Why would we be doing that story?
Well, there's a...
It's a lame story? Great. Now I'm going to go into this pre-prejudice.
Really, it's kind of a lame story. It's not bad, but it's not that great.
It's on Netflix. You know, I've read reports that people think this is probably the best one of that season.
Maybe of that season, but it's really not that great. It wasn't a great season either, Sean.
I enjoyed the book. I don't think I've... Honestly, it's another one I don't think I've ever actually seen. I think I read the Target novelization and...
Saving the world with a kettle and some
string. Some kettle and some string.
Is this where this line comes from?
Sort of.
Kind of.
Because I haven't seen him with a literal kettle or string yet.
Well,
so.
You'll see the string. I don't remember the kettle.
There's a fire. We're watching this because it leads directly into our discussion of the Swiss Army tool. The everything-in-one prop. The Ralph the all-purpose animal. What do we call it?
It's the sonic screwdriver.
I kind of tried to build up a little bit of mystery on it with our preview clip on the website, but I don't think there's any mystery. I think all of us kind of agree that it's been used too much.
Yeah.
So if you're looking forward to hearing some complaining, make sure you tune into our episode next week. Because
not only are we reviewing a really lame episode.
Although I've done a little bit of research.
Oh, you have?
Oh, good.
Yes.
With a surprise
of use of instances of the Sonic, and how what we have now is just a continuation.
We'll see.
Maybe
he said, eyebrow raised, glaring at Glenn.
Maybe overly used, but it's still nothing. It's
I don't know that it's a continuation. It's a progression.
It's a progression.
Yeah,
yeah.
No, I will totally concur with
even
that.
Even started with Classic Who.
I'm not saying it wasn't overused. In the Tennant era. I'm just saying it has been gravely overused in the Smith era.
I would agree with that.
All right.
I'm just saying
look, some we're on the same page this week, Sean.
Some instances and all were from Classic.
To reveal.
Well, then I guess we don't have anything to talk about.
All right.
We may also have a surprise interview for you if things go well, maybe. And also want to put a bug in your ear so that you guys know. Now, the following week for Friday Night, who will be doing The Rescue with William Hartnell. And then... three, count them, 1, 2, 3, Paul McGann, Big Finish Audios. So you've got 2 weeks to start work on those.
I've already heard them.
It only takes me a couple of days to hear
them. You got 2 weeks now. Embrace the Darkness, The Time of the Daleks, and Neverland, which are numbers 31, 32, and 33 in the main line. So, and the reason we're not going to talk about The Rescue for that show is because, well, then the following week we're going to be doing The Romans, and then we'll talk about both those stories together in that one. So... there is that, and then some fun things coming up for Halloween.
All right.
Woot.
Woot.
Well, if that's going to do it, then for this week, until next week, I'm Glenn.
I'm sad. I'm looking at my desktop wallpaper. It's got Amy and Rory on it. I'm Sean.
I'm Keith.
You make me laugh again. Cheers.
Why is that funny to you?
It's hilarious. I love to see you in pain.
I'm glad that my pain brings you such... What are you doing with a straight face? Good night, everybody.
Farewell, Pons.
You have been listening to Traveling the Vortex. Doctor Who and all of its associated programs are owned and trademarked by the BBC. No infringement is intended or implied.